Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
720 WGN, John Williams out today. John Hansen here until noon. Join the conversation, 312-981-7200. Got a pretty packed show here today. Just a little bit, we're going to break down the Golden Globes a little bit more. Heard Bob and Dean talking about Ricky Gervais. Got some of the clips from his monologue in case you missed it. I'm of the camp that I thought it was hilarious. That's who Ricky Gervais is. He threw a lot of fire out there. He also brought a beer up with him to the podium. That's how I would do it if they ever invited me up there. Didn't even have the bow tie on, Andy. He had the tux, but no tie, kind of a let-loose sort of feel to him.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to hearing this because I missed it last night listening to the Hawks game, getting ready for today's show. So yeah.
I loved him. I loved how he told them to make their speeches, just come up and don't say anything political, just get it over with.
Right, and I'm of the belief that everyone can have their opinion. I don't mind hearing celebrities say what they want, but not over and over and over again. And who cares? Just go up there and say thank you. Because at the end of the day, we don't really care all that much about you, and it becomes this whole self-serving show. Anyways, we'll get into that in just a little bit. I'm excited to chat after the 9:30 news with Nariman Savavi. I'll have to learn how to say his name first before we chat with him. But he's an Iranian-American entrepreneur, and he's an advisor to the Muslim American Leadership Alliance. And so he was born in Iran. He lives here now, American citizen. I'm just so fascinated by not only the politics of what he feels like, but what it would be like to be an Iranian living in Chicago, living in the United States in this day and age, in this moment when your home country where you're from originally and your current country where you live now or a citizen of now are battling against each other or potentially doing so. That must tug at you in so many different ways. So we're going to chat with him a little bit later on. As we're all kind of getting back into the motion of what the everyday life is again, Heather Sharone's going to come on by from the dailyline.net, and we're going to chat about, you know, kind of what to look forward to here in the city council and state government, what to look out for in 2020, and things pretty quickly happening at City Hall and beyond here in the early parts of 2020. The Australia wildfire thing is on everyone's mind, of course, as well. And I read this fascinating story that the fires are so intense that they're actually affecting the weather. They're actually forming...
They have their own weather systems.
Yes. Yeah. And they're forming thunderstorms, which in theory, if it could rain on the actual fires, would be great. But how it's fueling and how it's changing things. And Demetrius Ivey from good old Channel 9 is going to stop on by in a little bit later on. But Andy Mazur, I wanted to apologize to you.
Uh-oh.
During your sports report, I went to take an Instagram video.
Yes.
I pointed it right at you, and I think I threw you off there.
No,
if you heard
one little
stumble, that was my fault, everyone.
You can't tell these days, right?
Exactly.
I stumble so much. No, I'm just kidding.
Right. Hey, before we go to the weather and stuff, since I have you here, and you know, you were watching the Hawks game.
I was watching the Hawks.
Boy, they really turned things around here a little bit. They're looking a lot better.
Yeah, you know, they're more exciting to watch. I mean,
yes.
They got a lot of the young guys up there, and I understand too, with Brent Seabrook and Calvin DeHaan out for the year, it's a big blow to a team that wants to make the playoffs because you have veteran leadership in those two guys. But the flip side is you get a chance to see what Adam Boqvist can do, and you get a chance to see what other younger guys like Dylan Secura can offer your team. And it's nice to get them some meaningful minutes during a game when you're playing in the first period, second period. You're actually taking every shift.
Yeah.
And four lines were rolling last night. So that part of it's pretty cool. I mean, if they could just hold leads, you know, and be able to help out their goaltenders a little bit more, that would be really, really nice.
Yeah, and it was about 35 minutes before they really got into things. But, hey, once they did, at least they went rolling.
The floodgates, yeah.
Yeah, Secura with his first NHL goal. Boqvist, I think, with his second.
Second, yeah.
And it's great to see. And Kirby Dach has kind of had flashes.
Watching him
play. He's really fun to watch.
And
so
he's the kind of guy where you don't look at the numbers right now because they're going to be very deceiving.
He
doesn't have a lot of goals right now, but the things that he's doing, you know, I haven't seen a guy shield a puck like he does in a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And Marian Hossa was great at that. I'm not going to compare him to Marian Hossa, but I'm saying that that's the kind of style that we're seeing because he's a two-way guy, and it's great.
Yeah, it's great stuff. And speaking of that, we're going to be giving away some Blackhawks tickets a little bit later on in the show, so keep on listening for that. John Hansen here for John Williams until noon, and then we'll get the Wintrust Business Lunch with G. Suki, and then you know the rest of the lineup. Andy Mazur here in sports. We've got Steve Grzanich. Steve, I don't know if we've ever actually been able to chat on air. We've known each other for years. First time, I think, we've been across the microphones here together.
Yeah, I think this is the first, right?
Good to see you, Steve.
Yeah, good to see you.
Now, Mary, I wanted to ask you, because you immediately chimed in with your Ricky Gervais opinion. So do you find the Golden Globes and the award ceremonies, are you still, is that appointment television watching for you?
Yes.
Okay.
Well, until I can, I have to go to sleep.
Right, right, right. But you watch either the red carpet or at least the opening.
Yeah, I don't do the red carpet. Mm-hmm. It just bores the heck out of me.
Yeah.
So I will watch it till about 9. I make it, 9 or 9:30.
It's pretty good.
But it was pretty good. I thought it was moved along quickly.
Yeah.
And I loved Gervais.
Yeah, and I think that's what it comes down to. Like, if you are a Ricky Gervais fan, you probably loved that opening. If you're not as familiar with his style and how he feels about offending people and whether that's okay or not, you probably weren't on his side. And really, I was surprised at how people, even my my friends that I consider, I know and I love them, not liking the opening last night. It considered making me, having me defriend them, perhaps. 312-981-7200. I love your thoughts. All right, Andy, you didn't see any of this.
Did not see it.
Steve, did you see any of it? I'm sure you were.
I was sound asleep when it happened.
Well, there we go. So was I. So guess what? I pulled up some of the clips from the monologue, and he started it by taking aim at another celebrity that's been in the news recently.
You all look lovely. All dolled up, you came here in your limos. I came here in a limo tonight, and the license plate was made by Felicity Huffman. So, no. Shush.
That's funny.
Right?
It's her daughter I feel sorry for.
Yeah, no, I think that one's good, right?
Yeah, and then after that, he just dropped it real quick.
Yeah, but I mean, come on, what's so bad about that? She was in prison, what, for 2 weeks?
I loved it.
Come on. All right, I thought that one was good. All right, he spent some time talking about The Irishman, about how long it was, and then he took a pretty easy jab at our good friend Joe Pesci.
Lots of big celebrities here tonight. I mean, legends, icons, yeah? Look, at this table alone. Al Pacino, Robert De Niro. Baby Yoda. Oh, that's Joe Pesci, sorry.
Sorry, I kind of ruined the punchline there by giving that away. But come on.
That's funny.
But then he made
that's
a short
bad.
Joke after that.
Oh, right. He made fun of Scorsese for saying he's too short to ride the rides, because Scorsese made fun saying Avengers is nothing but a theme park. And he said, well, what does Scorsese know about theme parks? He can't even get on the rides.
That was a good one.
Are we too squeamish these days? I feel like this is pretty tame so far. I don't know. 312-981-7200. Did you love the Golden Globes? Did you like Ricky Gervais or not? Don't worry, we're just getting started. He tackled the issue of diversity in current Hollywood situations and
award shows. We were going to do an in memoriam this year, but when I saw the list of people that had died, it wasn't diverse enough. It just, no. It was mostly white people. And I thought, nah, not on my watch. Maybe next year. Let's see what happens.
You could hear the crowd.
Cool. But even though he keeps saying, I'm not going to be back next year, I'm not going to be back.
And it's classic Ricky Gervais.
I don't see what the problem is. Yeah, and you can kind of hear the uncomfortableness in the crowd there. And I think one of my favorite things when I watch the recaps of these shows, because I don't ever sit down and usually watch the whole thing or anything, it's the cutaways of the celebrities and the awkward faces they make. Because imagine, they're making fun of their friends, or at least people that they have to work with. I would love to see that here in our office, the reactions the faces we'd have to make knowing we were on TV if they were making slights about one of us. The other popular topic, of course, Epstein, everyone's talked about that. Gervais tackled that one as well.
You could binge watch the entire first season of Afterlife instead of watching this show. That's a show about a man who wants to kill himself because his wife dies of cancer, and it's still more fun than this, okay? Spoiler alert, season 2 is on the way, so in the end, he obviously didn't kill himself. Just like Jeffrey Epstein. Shut up! I know he's your friend, but I don't care.
Wow. That was where it started to get, it made me sweat a little bit,
That was a little uncomfortable, I thought.
But isn't that the whole...
Maybe too soon.
Yeah,
and I like how he tells him to shut up.
He did a lot of that. I just love he brought a beer up there. He said it's his fifth time. He's never going to do it again. The sort of relaxed approach to it. This one made me cringe a little bit, especially in this age of post Me Too. Talking about Leo DiCaprio.
Once upon a time in Hollywood, nearly 3 hours long, Leonardo DiCaprio attended the premiere, and by the end, his date was too old for him.
It was a little much. I don't know. But
because he's dating a 26-year-old.
Yeah.
Right?
I don't know. I didn't look up the age. Because which also, side note, Gervais went on afterwards to say something along the lines of that that he's over 50, or Leo's almost 50 years old right now.
Can that really be?
That's what I'm saying. Can that really be? It actually, I was just going through some kind of Today in History stuff, and this is a complete aside, but it sort of reminded you about the passage of time. Can you believe that Nancy Kerrigan, the Tonya Harding thing, was 26 years ago today? Yeah. Oh, my gosh.
By the way, the internet says that Leonardo DiCaprio is just 45 years old.
Oh, okay. All right.
So it can't really be.
Asked and answered. That's great stuff. Thank you for that quick update. That's why you're the newsman. Yeah, there, yeah. Steve. You're always ready to go. Okay, and then this one's a little bit longer. He tackles a few things here, including what I think was the best point of the night. Let's play clip six.
Apple roared into the TV game with a morning show. A superb drama. Yeah. A superb drama about the importance of dignity and doing the right thing, made by a company that runs sweatshops in China. So, well, you say you're woke, but the companies you work for, I mean, unbelievable. Apple, Amazon, Disney. If ISIS started a streaming service, you'd call your agent, wouldn't you? So, if you do win an award tonight, don't use it as a platform to make a political speech, right? You're in no position to lecture the public about anything. You know nothing about the real world. Most of you spent less time in school than Greta Thunberg. So, if you win, right, come up, accept your little award, thank your agent and your God,
and then just get off the stage. He didn't say that. The reason why that clip abruptly stops is because the Golden Globes blurbed out what he said next. So you'd have to read his lips a little bit. A little bit to unpack there. I love calling out the hypocrisy of people that are so woke, the actors, about causes, yet they work for these studios like Apple. I mean, it's true about who actually makes the phones and the devices that we all use. I think he's got a point. No? 312-981-7200. A lot of people texting in. A female turning 69 on Wednesday. She says, it's a little shocking at times, but I was laughing. 815 says, Ricky Gervais was awesome. He's the only reason I watched the show. I tell you what, I haven't watched a single. I couldn't even tell you who won if I hadn't caught a little bit of Bob and Dean at 820. I don't care about the winners. The monologue, I think, is the reason why I would even pay any attention whatsoever.
Well, that's because we don't know most of the shows.
Yeah,
too many
shows. What is this Succession, this show that won all of these awards? I'm like, I don't even know what it is. I never even heard of it.
Do you feel overwhelmed with the number of things we have to add to the list? And then I think we can take some comfort knowing that we'll just throw away the list within a week or two anyways, and then you're on to the next one. I mean, I still, every now and then I kind of see what was nominated for Best Picture in the Academy Awards over the last 10 years. And I can remember the angst having not seen it and just going, boy, there is so much, whether it's movies or TV, it's everywhere. Fleabag won some awards.
I haven't seen that yet.
I barely had heard of it. 1917, like we were saying, I think you said, Mary, last hour.
It just came out.
Exactly. There's so much. Yeah. 773 says Joaquin Phoenix and the actress right about the same time made it unviewable ever again. But someone says hearing these clips makes me wish that I had tuned in to see it live as part of the collective experience.
Oh, by the way, Leo's girlfriend's only 22 years old.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
Okay. Yeah, but he's 45, so that's not
too Yeah, right.
Too
he wasn't
bad.
50.
Something you said earlier, John, I have to agree with you. I think we are at that point where you can't make fun of people anymore.
Mm-hmm.
I know when I'm in a group of people and there's something that I think is funny, I kind of look around to see if everybody's laughing first, because it just feels like,
right. No.
It feels like I'm going to be judged or there's going to be some sort of harsh reaction.
And that's why Ricky, I mean, he does it the way he does it, but he's an advocate, I guess you could say, or an anti-advocate for cancel culture. He talks about this a lot on Twitter. He'll go after topics that other people will call taboo. I saw he's done the Comedians in Cars Getting Coffee with Jerry Seinfeld a couple times. That is must watch for anyone that thinks that we are too oversensitive these days, because he really does tackle that. And you know, I've always felt like, this conversation kind of came up, and we could go down a whole tangent here. Eddie Murphy's been in the news recently, of course. He hosted SNL. Go back and watch Delirious back in the early 80s, and the jokes he makes about gay people and AIDS, they feel so cringeworthy. But even as someone who's part of the LGBT community, every now and then you could chuckle at those jokes. And that's obviously 30-some years ago, and that's a whole different story. But I've always felt like at the end of the day, if it makes you laugh, then at least have the humor to just kind of pass. It's okay. If you're laughing at it and it makes you chuckle, then who cares? You can choose whether you want to be offended or not. The default doesn't have to be, oh, I'm offended. And I think that's what it is these days. I think we're looking for that moment to be offended as opposed to just like actually reacting in real time to if we laugh or if we find it offensive or not. 630 says, I thought Gervais was funny, but not on point as he was usually. Huh. I thought he was pretty well on point there. 773 says, I may be in the minority, but I watch very little TV. I don't have time to go to Netflix. Okay. 630 says, he's the reason to watch. I didn't watch live, but I looked up Tom Hanks' speech, which was pretty emotional. Mary, did you see that? Were you
no,
up for that?
I saw Ellen DeGeneres' speech, yeah. And that was phenomenal.
That was great. And
I just love her.
Ellen's, yes. And Kate McKinnon, her lead-in, I thought, was incredible. She talked about how Ellen really set the standard, talking about how fast time goes. I can't even fathom that it's been, what, 20 years since, less than that, since Ellen came out on her show, and how she was blackballed from television for years and years, and now we've made such progress. But I thought it was great of Kate McKinnon to kind of honor someone that paved the way in a courageous way for the LGBT community. When we have these social changes, I think it's important to look back at the people who were braver and allowed us to walk these paths a little bit easier. Anyways, I thought it was the monologue was great. I'm a big Ricky Gervais fan, but I know some people are not as much so. Okay, coming up after the news, we're going to be talking to an Iranian-American entrepreneur about what that is like living here in Chicago in the United States while our country prepares potentially for military conflict in Iran. John Hansen in for John Williams until 12 o'clock. Just a few more texts on the Ricky Gervais thing. Oh, Andy, by the way, I was so impressed with how you said that one name in sports. What was that again?
You mean Tua Tagovailoa?
How long does that take you to really get those down?
You know what? That one's especially tough because it doesn't look like it sounds. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's some vowels that are kind of juxtaposed mm-hmm. to what your eye actually goes to.
Mm-hmm.
And to try to say it quickly without really stumbling. Now, in all honesty, I phonetically spell these things out on my script.
Right, of course.
It's Tung-A-Vie-Low-A.
Do you say it just enough times in your head that then when you see the word, you're able to just regurgitate it on command?
Yeah, but sometimes you freak out a little bit and you think, oh my God, did I say that right or did I not say that right? And you know, every once in a while, I do wonder.
Well, the good thing with that one is we wouldn't know.
Good
probably.
Point.
312-981-7200. Last few comments about Ricky Gervais. 630 says, and I think this is what he was getting at. He says, how about all the quote-unquote concern about the Australian fires burning, getting attention last night at the Globes? Then these are the same morons that hop into their SUVs, jet out of town, and pollution-pumping planes. That's a good part of why koalas are being roasted. Fair point. I mean, I think that that's what Ricky was trying to call out, too. Like, hey, you have your own opinion on things, and that's great, but keep in mind that it's your own hypocrisy which contributes to some of these issues. I think that's what he was getting at for Apple as well. A lot of other people saying, Ricky Gervais is a modern-day Don Rickles, which is interesting. Obviously, kind of a different delivery style, but that no-holds-bar sort of delivery and getting at celebrities is fine. Suzanne from Wakanda, she says that her mom was a British citizen. This is setting up her Ricky Gervais comment, that I could have done completely without hearing any crud talk about anything from loser Gervais. Nothing he said was funny.
Mm.
I don't know how you can listen to those 8 or 9 minutes, and I get everyone has their, I don't see how you don't chuckle once. None of it was funny. Not a little, one little thing made you laugh? To each their own. By the way, the News Click question from Friday, we had it up, and it was a real heated discussion, too. Many parents are not sending their kids to CPS school for the strike makeup days. CPS did this thing that they didn't want to extend too far into the summer, so they took former teacher institute days and turned them into strike makeup days, which I think in theory sounds good. The idea being that if you have a summer vacation plan, since, 11 days they took off for the strike, that you don't want to like ruin everybody's summer vacation plans by pushing them back. So they did them on these teacher institute days. Well, two of the days were last week, the day after New Year's and on Friday, so the 2nd and the 3rd. But one of the other strike days that had already been made up saw very low attendance. I think it was around the Thanksgiving holiday, maybe the Wednesday before. And they were such low attendance numbers. And then for the second and third, I imagine we'll have to get the full report from CPS. Heather Sharon coming on in a little bit. Maybe she'll be able to give us a little insight into the numbers. But the question was, if you were a parent and you had your kids scheduled originally to be off the whole New Year's week, and then all of a sudden the strike happens, and now they're slated to come back the day after New Year's, would you send them to school or not? A says, I wouldn't either. It's winter break. And the other option was, I would. School is school. Where do you think the numbers that lined up on that one, Andy?
I'm thinking A won.
A actually lost.
Really?
68-32. But I think this is one of those things where it's aspirational polling or asking the question. Yeah. I think every parent out there wants to believe that if they had a child or any listener or whatever, whoever's voting, that they would, of course, lay down the hammer. But I think at the end of the day, man, you're going to probably maybe call your kids in, right? 312-981-7200. I have time for a couple thoughts on it. Because I imagine a lot of people had plans.
Yeah, maybe I was going to say, if you have plans, what are you going to do? It's hard to change. You know, airline tickets right now, if you're out of town, I mean, that's impossible to change unless you're like a rewards member of the utmost precedence. And it's tough to do.
Yeah, I agree. And even like, especially the 2nd of January, I remember one year I was a product of Downers Grove School. So I just remember one year was a big to do that we had our high school go back on January 2nd. And it was a huge thing because I think the 1st was on a Sunday and we had to go back on the 2nd. They were doing some construction at the school, so they had to move up the whole schedule. And that was a big deal for kids to get back. I mean, and for parents too. I mean, you're barely recovered yourself. I know some of them might have to, you know, put on the big boy pants and go to work that day, but I get it. I get calling kids out because at the end of the day, what's a day or two, right? To be able to spend a little bit more time with your family, not have to rush, change your whole routine.
And then there's a lot of daycare issues because somebody has, you know, daycare and they can't, they have to stay home with their kids because they can't get somebody else to babysit or whatever. So,
yeah, it sparked a lot of conversation on Friday. We don't have to rehash the whole thing, but 68-32 is school is school versus the idea of I wouldn't either. It is winter break. All right, let's look at a few texts on that subject. 312-981-7200. In just a few moments, we're going to talk to Nariman Savavi. He's an Iranian-American entrepreneur. I'm just so fascinated, and I'm going to find out if it's just me or not, but I imagine there's other people out there, Andy, that the idea of being born, so he was born in Tehran, came to the United States, studied at Illinois State University. He's an entrepreneur now. The idea of your current country where you live, where you're a citizen of, where you've studied and gotten a job, potentially going to war or certain some sort of at the very least saber rattling against your home country. I just can't imagine. I know we've dealt with that here in the United States, certainly World War II, where you remember how we treated Japanese Americans and how German Americans, a lot of people changed their last names, certainly when they came over after World War I. But it's happening here today in Chicago, a very strong Iranian community here in Chicago and the United States. I'm just kind of fascinated what that must be like. So we're going to chat with him in just a little bit. Then Heather Sharon's going to join us from the dailyline.net as we get back to a lot of kids back to school today, a lot of folks back to work today. Same with city council and all things happening in local government. We'll chat about that. As well as we mentioned the Australian wildfire. We're going to have Demetrius Ivory talking about how some of these storms are, these fires, excuse me, are actually starting their own storms as well. John Hansen in for John Williams until 12 o'clock. That'll take you right up to the Wintrust Business Lunch. Excited to talk to my next guest, Nari Savavi. Thanks for coming on the program here today, Nari.
Thank you very much for having me.
So let's get a little bit of your story because you got your education at Illinois State University.
Yes.
But you're originally from Tehran.
I'm originally from Tehran, but I grew up in Park Ridge and went to Maine South High School and went to ISU also for college and have been around for a while, and I've also been an on-air personality at WBEZ NPR Chicago for the last few years talking about culture and art.
Don't show off here. Come on, Nari. All right, so Nari, at what age did you move to the United States?
Well, I moved to the United States in 1976, mm-hmm. and I already had my family was already permanent residents in the United States. So my family was even living in the United States even before I was born.
Mm-hmm.
But I was born on the Iranian side of the family, so and I moved over here a little bit later.
So what's it like for someone who your home country is Iran to live through this current situation? I mean, obviously, this isn't your first go around at problems between the United States and Iran, but this is pretty severe stuff.
This is a very taxing kind of a moment for to be an Iranian American, because you love two countries that are in conflict with each other. One is your birthplace, and the other one is the one that accepted you warmly and offered you lots of privileges and opportunities in life. So it's very, very difficult moment for most people. And also a lot of Iranian Americans are now concerned that, you know, there are people being held up at the border, even mm-hmm. though they're Iranian, they're U.S. citizens, they're being held up at the borders in Seattle and several other places. There's even, you know, yesterday I had several phone calls with people who are saying, are we going to be put into concentration camp? Is it going to be the same thing that happens in the Texas border with Mexican Americans? Is the same thing going to happen to us? It's a very, very difficult moment for people, for the community right now.
Do you find yourself seeing, I mean, as I wish we all would do a little bit more, seeing both sides of the argument here? I mean, you speak of great love of the United States, yes. Of course, and there's different things that people could say about the general who was murdered.
Yes,
but that's got to be a strange tug both ways.
It's a very, very, well, vast majority of Iranian Americans do not support the regime in Iran, and they do not have a high opinion of General Soleimani, and I am also one of them. However, I don't think that to kill him this way was a justifiable action for the president to do. I think it was a very callous act of foreign policy, and General Soleimani has always been a person who has been in favor of crackdowns as a use of putting out dissent inside the country. And also he has tried to militarize the nation's foreign policy, trying to minimize the foreign minister, minimize the president, and saying, I'm the general and I call the shots over here. So in a way, he's a very, not a very likable or admirable character. But if we are honest, we also have to accept that he was very effective against Al-Qaeda and ISIS in Syria and Iraq. He is a repugnant character, but he was a very effective person in that limited task. And Baghdadi and Osama bin Laden called him their number one enemy. So, and he collaborated with the United States in Syria and in Iraq to help defeat ISIS.
When you look back and see some of the footage, I don't know if you've seen some of the footage of the funeral that was held.
Yes.
And you see, I guess, your fellow countrymen from where you're from originally celebrating this man and, you know, going to the streets. Do you think some of that is, do you think it's genuine? Do you think that the people really feel that way?
I think a lot of that is staged by, these are sponsored kinds of events by the government. So a lot of it is staged, but also a lot of people may feel like him, you know, they are pushed by President Trump's action into the arms of the regime and going along with him and calling him a hero, because he is, he is a person who represented defiance of attack against by United States. So he is actually, I would say most of that is staged, but there will be some sympathies, nationalistic sympathies for him.
So moving forward as an Iranian American, do you ever witness firsthand? I mean, here you are in Chicago, where I think a lot of people are welcoming people, a welcoming
Absolutely.
City at that. Do you feel like, you mentioned at the borders, I was just sawing, I forget, I think it was a local, not a local journalist, but a journalist here in America that was stopped at the airport just for some additional screening. He even himself said they were very respectful.
Right.
They just wanted to ask some extra questions, but still it's extra scrutiny that he would not have otherwise gotten. Do you feel like it's an okay time to be an Iranian American, or do you worry about further escalations causing some rifts between our communities, or do you think we're strong enough to withstand this sort of stuff?
Well, I have to be honest with you. I have some trepidation right now. I'm supposed to go overseas in a couple of days myself and come back in a couple of weeks. I'm wondering, you know, I'm just going to go to Europe and go to Spain, but I'm wondering what's going to happen to me when I come back, when I try to re-enter this country. So it is a time for a lot of people to take reflection and take stock in what they're doing. Some people may have been thinking about going to Iran and visiting Iran. Relative visiting ailing parents or grandparents, and now they're having second thoughts about going that. And also in Iran, there were demonstrations against the government just 2 months ago, and anywhere from 600 to 1,500, according to Amnesty International. Marshall might have been killed. And General Soleimani might have been a person who ordered all of those crackdowns. So some people are thinking about that. Do I go and visit my ailing grandfather right now?
It's a very human thing when you really
think about it.
You know, I'm not a student of immigration policies from the Middle East. I'm not a student of any immigration policy, just say that. But having studied a little bit, I'm not as familiar with immigration from the Middle East. Was when you came in 76, was that part of a large wave of Iranians coming to the United States? And I guess what I'm asking is, do you still have family there, or are there a lot of Iranian Americans that do have family still?
Yeah, I have a lot of cousins and aunts and uncles and distant relatives, you know, who are there. And I do, on occasion, once every 2-3 years, go and visit them. But in 76, there were a lot of Iranians here, but they came here as students, as college students. At that time, the relationship between U.S. and Iran was very good. And U.S. colleges saw this as a way of getting hard currency out of visiting students from other parts of the world coming paying out-of-state tuition to all these universities. So at that time, there was a lot of that. But a lot of those people, after revolution, ended up staying, and they got jobs, and they had an opportunity to get permanent residency in this country, and they became eventually citizens. So that's been that, and there have been several waves. It's usually the more crackdowns and the more social disruption there is to Iran, there is a wave of immigration to this country.
Not to put you on the spot, do you know how many Iranian Americans live in Chicago? Is there a rough estimate? Is it a vibrant community?
It's a very vibrant community, and there has been a lot of recent immigration coming to Chicago, especially at the universities, because a lot of really outstanding students in universities in Iran end up getting scholarships to come to American universities. I would say there is no really clear statistics, but I would say anywhere from 20 to 30,000 Iranian Americans live in the Chicago area.
What do you hope to see moving forward? I think, and no matter what nationality you are, we're all hoping for peace.
Absolutely.
And, you know, trepidation as we move forward. But I imagine on a very personal level, you feel it as the calmer heads prevailing is personal to you.
It is very personal to me, and I do hope that the calmer heads will prevail. It seems like some of the Iranian government officials are being advised by people like President Macron of France. Instead of giving a military response, take this case to the United Nations Security Council, and we will support you over there. Although the United States has a veto. But they say, but it will still be a very good show trial for you and to make your case globally.
And go through those.
And put the United States on the defensive. That will get you much more value instead of just sending some rockets someplace or whatever and killing a few people and then maybe invite another response back from the United States.
Nari, thanks for your perspective here today. We appreciate it.
Yes.
I want to thank Nari for coming on in here. He's also part of the Muslim American Leadership Alliance, an organization I've talked to here a few times. They're a great organization that helped give voices to a lot of stories here in America. You know, we think of the quintessential what it is to be an American, and lots of people have so many different journeys and ways they got to this country and became a part of our country and our fabric here. It's always great to hear their stories, and Mala does a great job at that. Couple texts. When did this guy you're talking with become a spokesperson on the U.S. foreign policy? He should go back and stay there. Stop trying to make news. Just report it. I was just curious about the personal perspective of someone who is born in one country and then lives and works in another country. I think it's fascinating. Didn't intend for him to be a spokesperson in any sort of foreign policy. His opinion is his own, of course, but an interesting perspective at that. John Hanson in for John Williams until noon, and then we'll get the Wintrust business lunch, and then the afternoon lineup progresses as we normally do. And the Devontae's at 1, and then we got Rokan at 3 today. All right, we got Heather Sharone on from thedailyline.net. Heather, good to see you again.
I'm happy to be here.
And you were one of the last people to see Hamilton in Chicago.
I was able to take my 10-year-old daughter, who is a huge Hamilton fan, and it was amazing to see Miguel Cervantes do it one more time, and it had the whole cast, and it was actually the third time that I've seen Hamilton, so I think that qualifies me as a little bit of a super fan.
Yeah,
not
a groupie.
As big as Mayor Lori Lightfoot, who said last night she'd seen it 9 times.
Well, she probably has an in.
Well, and she's got maybe a little bit of a bigger budget,
financial purse strings that she can tug. Yeah.
But it was, you know, as a Chicagoan, it was just such an honor to have it here for so long after being in New York. And I was thrilled to hear that our Hamilton is now going to be New York's Hamilton.
That's pretty cool stuff.
It is.
All right. So, Heather, thedailyline.net, you guys do great stuff there. And, I mean, the city never sleeps, and city council doesn't either. But it was a nice couple weeks. Not a ton of news coming out of City Hall.
It was a pretty quiet break. Mayor Lori Lightfoot was out of town. She's back now, and tomorrow aldermen will return to City Hall for a full slate of committee meetings with all sorts of things on the docket for 2020.
Before we get to what's on the docket, let's talk a little bit about what we've been talking about the news today. The surcharge starting today. Just break it down a little bit. I know it might be complicated for some people, but it's rides to the Loop, or not in the Loop, I mean the downtown area, but right beyond that too.
Also, so the West Loop and the near north side. And if you get in an Uber by yourself in anywhere in that area, you're going to pay a triple fee on that.
Is it only when you get picked up in that area?
No, it's either you get picked up or dropped off in that area. So it's really designed to keep single ride, ride hailing vehicles out of the Central Business District, defined writ large.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea is that it will raise $40 million that the city desperately needs to help close its budget gap. And it is an attempt to see if it's a way to reduce congestion. And that is, I think, a very much an open question. So we'll see if it works, and we will see whether it withstands a legal challenge that Uber has lodged against a similar fee in Skokie in the north suburbs. And if that fee is overturned there, I think you will see about 30 seconds later Chicago's fee challenged in court.
Is the argument that it's, I don't know what the argument is. What does Uber contend is wrong with it? Doesn't the city have prerogative to issue these sorts of fees?
Sure. I think one of the issues is that it doesn't apply to taxi cabs. And
oh, okay.
Uber's argument is that you can't treat us differently than taxi cabs. If this is a fee that you think is important, then it should sort of, you know, apply across the board. Also, they say there's better ways to reduce congestion. There's better ways to encourage people to take shared ride, because the other half of this is if you take a shared ride, you're going to get a little bit of a discount from what it was in 2019. So it's designed to help any number of different things, including the fact that bus ridership is down significantly, mm-hmm. and train ridership. And we've seen in the data that the city publishes that so many of these single ride Uber rides are along transit routes that people could take a bus, the people could take a train, but are making a different decision because it's not that much more expensive than mm-hmm. getting on public transportation, but it has an environmental cost and a congestion cost.
It's interesting. So in many ways, they feel like they're going to double benefit from this. They're going to get the little tax from the folks that take the Ubers, but then for the people that don't and they choose CTA, that's going to help CTA's coffers too.
That's right. So there hasn't been a transit fee hike for the CTA in at least a couple of years. But the sense is that falling ridership is really going to have to be made up somewhere along the lines.
I wonder, because I think the boundary in the north is Grand and in the west it's Ashland.
Right.
I wonder if there's going to be more people like going to Paulina or going to Superior or Erie, and you're just going to clog up those streets with people just walking the extra block or two.
The data is going to be really interesting to see. It may also raise much more money than the city would expect. And that, I think, will be a double-edged sword for the city, because I'm sure that they will be glad for the extra dollars. But I think it will show that it's not really the stick of changing people's behavior isn't really big enough, or it's
yeah.
not working.
It's almost like in that middle line. It's enough to hurt it a little bit, but not enough to make me change what I'm going to do. Three extra dollars. Maybe for some people, though. Do you mind if I take a phone call, Heather?
Absolutely.
All right, let's go to Matthew. Matthew, you're on WGN. Thoughts on the Uber, ride. You're a driver, right?
Yes, I am, sir. Thank you for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so there are borderlines to the tax.
Okay.
That's what I would like to say.
Okay.
So it goes from North Avenue.
Right. Okay.
West to, I believe, around the expressway.
Mm-hmm.
Grand West through the West Loop.
Over to Ashland.
South. Yeah, basically to Ashland. Grand and Ashland.
As a driver, what do you think about this?
I'll stay in the suburbs.
Yeah.
I live in the suburbs.
Yeah. Thanks for the call, Matt. I imagine a lot of drivers feel the same way, that maybe they'll just make more bang for their buck, although at the end of the day, like you said, if it doesn't change behavior, I imagine some people are just going to do it anyways. And now we should say that if you're doing Saturday or Sunday, it doesn't affect you, right?
Right. So it's really designed, you know, for work hours, rush hour. The other thing that people will be watching very closely is the number of trips from the south and the west sides into the loop. So if you live in a neighborhood like Chatham or Englewood, you don't have a lot of public transportation options to get to the loop. You got to change buses, you got to find a train line. So there were a lot of people who were worried that this would disproportionately impact Black and Brown Chicagoans who really didn't have any other option besides Uber or Lyft.
Mm-hmm.
So if we see a significant drop in the number of people using ride hailing to come into the loop, I think that that will also be an issue when the aldermen are sort of putting together the budget for 2021,
yeah,
whether to continue this in some way.
So you may not know the answer to this question. Does Uber and the city, I know that they have some contentious relationships, does Uber share a lot of data with the city?
Yes. Yeah, so there is a plethora of data available on the city's data portal, which shows sort of how many trips, sort of the duration, sort of how much people paid. So there's a lot of data out there that people can access to sort of figure out if this is effective or not.
I just can't see a lot of people ultimately getting up in arms for someone in the Gold Coast having to pay $3 more to get around.
Yeah.
I know there's a lot of other people, but I think the majority of people affected are going to be young people who go out, or the commuters that choose to go from Old Town to downtown when the Red and Brown Line does it. No problem.
That is absolutely...
The Clark bus, the LaSalle bus. Like, I mean, there are options, but the laziness, and I've been there too, where you're just like, you know, I'm in a rush, I want to sleep an extra 10 minutes, and I think those people are still going
to
do it.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see. It'll be interesting to see. And the mayor has really made, you know, ride-hailing companies a target, saying that they sort of encourage that laziness that comes with a cost to the city and a cost to the infrastructure. So it'll be interesting to see if she continues her sort of, you know, I don't want to say attack, but targeting of the ride hailing companies in 2021 after sort of socking it to them in 2019.
Quick thing, though, you said it's only for a single person, or is it a single, like an Uber X? So
no.
If you have two of you going in a ride.
If it's a shared ride in any way, you don't pay the extra tax.
That's interesting, because I think a lot of times I just put, even if it's Enrique and I just put one passenger because I'm just looking for the Uber X car, but I should just change that, toggle it to two?
Right.
Okay, that's good to know. Tell you what, we're going to take a quick commercial break and then more with Heather Cerrón here on 720 WGN. Heather Cerrón from the DailyLine.net. Really quickly, Daily Line, what you guys do?
So we are your one-stop shop for all Chicago, Cook County, and state politics news. And 2020 is going to be quite a year, so you need to smash that subscribe button.
There, you smash it as hard as you can, yeah. And then you get an email, you do a morning newsletter.
That's right. So every morning at 6:15, you get all of the news you need to know about Chicago, so you can sign up for both the Chicago and the Springfield newsletter, or you can pick your poison,
all
as
right.
It were.
So pot was the big thing in 2019, one of the big things. 2020, what sorts of things are we looking forward to statewide?
So the big issue statewide is going to be the success or failure of the graduated tax income question. So when we all go to the polls in November 2020 to pick the next president, Illinois voters will also be asked whether the state's income tax should be changed from a flat tax, where you pay the same no matter what you make, or a graduated tax, which means that the very, very highest earners, so people making more than $250,000 a year, will pay a little bit more, and everybody else will pay a little bit less.
So it's the question on the changing the Constitution, because right now it's in the Illinois Constitution.
Right.
There's not going to be specifics in this question in terms of the rates.
There are specific rates. So the Illinois General Assembly adopted rates to say this is exactly what would happen if this ballot measure passes in November 2020. So it's all there, so people can sort of see, and Governor Pritzker, his website has sort of the calculator. You can put in your annual salary and see what it would mean for you.
So here's where I'm confused. If they're trying to amend the Constitution, I'm surprised that it's not just more of a generic question, that they're actually going to put the rates there in writing, because then that assumes that once they change it, they still would have to get this through legislatively through the normal means, right? Or would that automatically trigger it?
Automatically triggers. $1 million. Those rates have already been approved by the General Assembly. So they sort of did the whole thing at once. They said, here, we're putting this question to voters, and if this question is approved by voters, here's what goes into effect. And the governor says it's going to raise about $3.4 billion for the state, and it will help the state do two things. One, pay down its multi-billion dollar backlog, which was sort of created by the two-year budget impasse, and it will help the state start paying down its massive pension debt.
It's so fascinating to me because normally when we have referendum questions, they're a little bit more general or they're not even binding. They're just a suggestive sort of question. Here is like the truest form of democracy. You have the bill that went through the legislature at your fingertips. I mean, whichever side you land on, that is rare to vote on a specific piece of legislation.
Now, if I were an opponent of the graduated tax, I would say, well, there's nothing that binds the General Assembly to those tax rates. They could say, okay, we're going to keep those rates for a year. And then, surprise, everybody's income tax rate is going to go up dramatically now that we have the power to change these. So that is going to be a lot of the argument. Like, essentially, can we trust that these will actually be the rates for more than a year?
Mm-hmm.
The other question is that nobody quite knows what's going to happen with the swirling corruption investigations in Springfield. You know,
corruption in Springfield.
I know, shocking. Mm-hmm. So the question is can Governor Pritzker and his allies convince Illinois voters that they will basically spend this money well and that it's not going to be siphoned off or, you know, misused or misspent? And you're going to see a lot of Illinois Republicans who oppose this vociferously saying that basically state government isn't trustworthy.
You know, so the tax bracket, I know you probably don't have it right in front of you, but I know it's like, what, 4.95 would go up to 7.25? Is it directly over the 250,000 mark, or is there kind of graduated levels to that?
It does go graduated up. So if you make $250,000 plus $1, you're not going to pay like the full amount.
Right.
It does sort of, you know, step up a little bit.
Okay, so what else citywide? I know you mentioned that we've got committee meetings and other stuff like that starting on up.
Well, so Mayor Lori Lightfoot still says that she's going to keep rolling back the power of aldermen to sort of have the final veto in their wards. And now she's got to sort of, you know, do it. And the heart of that power is in the city's zoning code. And I know people across Chicago just fell asleep as I said the word zoning. But basically, it's the rules that determines whether you can build a high rise or an apartment building or a business on any given piece of land. And right now, if an alderman in a ward says, nope, don't want it, it doesn't go. So the mayor will have to rewrite the city's zoning code and reverse decades of culture at City Hall to really change that. And that is very much an open question.
Well, and get the aldermen that she's trying to take the power away from, get them to be the ones to vote on it.
That's right. So it is a tall order. And at the same time, she's got to find a new police superintendent to replace Eddie Johnson. She still has to deal with sort of ongoing tensions with the Chicago Teachers Union, which, of course, went on strike for 11 days in 2019. And oh, by the way, the city's budget deficit for 2021, even though we closed an $838 million budget deficit just a couple months ago, is close to $1 billion.
Oh, on the books already.
Projected. So that's going to be tough. And she's going to have to ask Springfield for a number of different items, including new rules for a potential Chicago casino.
Do you think that she wields the sort of support or power, I guess you could say, as when she first walked in? Or do you think that the teacher strike really kind of set some people on edge about how she's done and given her the power to move forward?
Well, there's no doubt that the biggest concentrated source of opposition to the mayor has been the city council's progressive aldermen. So not only the six socialist aldermen, but also the progressive caucus writ large. So there were 11 aldermen who voted against the budget. So that's sort of the core of the support. And the question is, can those aldermen sort of grow that to present more of an obstacle? Or can the has the mayor sort of struck a balance between sort of the conservatives on the city council Council and those progressives, and she's sort of in the middle. But it is an interesting situation that you have a mayor who came into office promising to chart a much more progressive course than former Mayor Rahm Emanuel, finds herself opposed, really not at every turn, but for her big initiatives by the heart of the progressive movement in Chicago.
One thing that she advocated for, as other people before have as well, is being more balanced in her appointees. And how is she doing on that report card?
Funny you should ask. That was the subject of the Daily Lines newsletter this morning.
So I may have opened up the website and saw that and just led with that question.
So I did an analysis of her appointees, and they are split almost exactly down the middle between men and women and white people and people of color. So she is, you know, she has promised to make her appointees look like Chicago, to do the business of Chicago, and she is right on that, which is a difference than Mayor Rahm Emanuel's first term, where the majority of his appointees were male and white.
Where are we at with the gambling situation, the casino that is supposedly coming eventually here to Chicago?
So the mayor has to go back to Springfield to get new gambling legislation passed that changes the tax structure for the casino. So right now, if a Chicago casino appeared out of the blue, the operators would pay an effective tax rate of 72%. The mayor says that means nobody's going to want to build that casino. Nobody's going to want to invest in that casino. So she has asked the state legislature to change the laws to make it more attractive. However, that bill, which passed in the waning hours of the spring session, is a Christmas tree. Every little ornament was hung on there to get it through. So it's very difficult to change it without pulling the whole thing down on your head. And you have the perennial argument from downstate lawmakers, why would I help Chicago?
Mm-hmm.
And why would I help Chicago in an election year?
Right.
So that's really tough, and there's no doubt that the governor is laser focused on getting this graduated income tax passed.
Mm-hmm.
But he's also pledged to help the mayor because the city's budget really, really needs revenue from a casino in 2021 and 2022.
Yeah, when you start talking about these deficits, I know people hate paying extra taxes. I know people don't like it, but gotta close this one way or another. Let's do you mind going back to the Uber thing for one second? Frank on the line has a good question. Frank, you're on WGN.
Hey, I have a question. There's four locations that get taxed, both airports, Midway and O'Hare, McCormick Place, and Navy Pier. If you're by yourself, or whether you're with four people in your party, you get the same rate, no matter if it's one person in your party or four. But if you're traveling from the Loop to the airport, you're already getting almost a $6 tax just for traveling to the airport. So if you're going by yourself, is Lightfoot putting an additional $3 tax on top of the airport tax going to the airport?
Correct.
So that would be almost a $10 fee just in Chicago taxes?
Correct. Any single ride that originates in that central business district downtown area, wherever it goes, gets that extra tax. And if you're going to the airport, you also pay that airport fee. Or McCormick Place.
So now, has Uber changed their platform by asking how many people are in your party? Because when you do a shared ride, currently you're only allowed two people in a shared ride. Because usually most cars only have four seats, so it's five seats, the driver and then four passenger seats. So is Uber and Lyft now asking how many people are in your party?
You know, I don't know. Yeah. I haven't tried it so far this morning.
Yeah, that's a great question, Frank. We got to get going over to the news, and I'm sorry I don't have an answer for you. I think it says on the line here you're an Uber driver. I would guess I would ask Uber, because that's an interesting question, is could I change it to say that I'm going to have two people in my party, and then driver shows up, and no, it's just me. I'm sure they've worked out a way to make sure that we still pay one way or another.
One way or the other.
One way or the other, they're going to get you. That is interesting. I mean, you're talking about $9 now going from downtown to the airport. Sounds like you should take the blue line at that point. Not that that's the most reliable thing. Oh, and then when you get there, the people mover's not ready to move you anywhere. Oh, Chicago. Heather, got about 30 seconds left. Any one big story you can't wait to talk about this year?
Well, Ed Burke is back in front of a federal judge in a couple of weeks, and we should know whether he will continue to sort of await trial or if they will actually set a trial date everybody wants to know when that will all come to a head. He faces 14 counts of corruption charges. He has pled not guilty.
And that's going to involve a lot of other people besides him.
It sure will.
Who will be called to that trial if it happens? Ooh, that'll be one that everyone's watching, including the great folks at thedailyline.net. Heather Sharon, 10 seconds, your elevator pitch.
Thedailyline.net, your one-stop shop for city, county, and state politics and policy news.
And I got to say that the county stuff doesn't often get the plugs that it needs, but it's some good coverage there, too.
It's a lot. It's a huge budget that covers a lot of people. It's really important.
Thanks for stopping by, Heather. John Hanson here in for John Williams. Steve Bertrand, good to hear from you. A pleasant Monday morning to you.
What's up, John Hanson?
So I was thinking about you on New Year's Eve night.
Were you? Yeah.
Yeah. So I assume you were well in bed. No problems. All tucked in.
I made it up to about 11:15.
That's pretty good.
That's shocking for me, yeah.
And you woke up and it was still the New Year.
It happened even without me watching it.
It became a good conversation. I had some people over at my place, and obviously everyone that came over and stayed for...
Well, had you invited me.
Yeah, then you would have done it, or would you still have gone to bed at 11:15?
I would have gone to bed on your couch, perhaps.
Well, I got one in the guest bedroom. That's fine. I got to tell you, by about 12:03, I was looking at my watch going, when are these people leaving? Turns out it was 12:08. I made sure that they knew I had to get up early the next day. But yeah, it was an interesting conversation. I had it with a few other people, but a lot of people took your side, I gotta say, saying that the new year didn't matter to them quite as much as I thought it did.
You were saying you can't imagine not seeing the new year in. That makes no sense to me.
I know. I get it. The sun rises without me knowing it every day, but something about it made a difference. All right, and just a little, actually, Ella, are we going to be talking with Demetrius? Can I pot up the weather right now? Let me do it. Okay. Demetrius, can you hear me?
Yeah, can you hear me back?
I put on the right button. How exciting is that?
That's always...
Yes, because if I'm diving through 9 different faders here to get you, it's not great radio.
Yes.
Well, you dialed up a nice day here for us today, boy.
Pretty good, right?
Yeah.
We're looking at high temperatures in the low 40s this afternoon, mostly sunny skies. Later tonight, we'll get some flurries come our way, maybe even a snow shower, but nothing really heavy, nothing really serious or significant at all. 38 on Tuesday. Wednesday, we do cool down, but kind of like a normal January number, which, let's face it, is going to be cool as heck to us.
Yes,
28
right.
degrees, the high temperature there.
I've always wondered that, because 35 degrees in October feels like, oh my goodness, but when you've endured it for so long, there's got to be some science behind what your body kind of gets used to, right?
Right. I've read that if it's below a 5-degree difference, humans really don't feel it.
Okay.
So 80 to 85, 90 to 95, people, generally don't feel it. After that, we start to feel it. But we do obviously get used to certain temperatures where, like now, a typical day with a high of in the upper 20s is going to feel pretty cold to us right now.
Yeah, for sure. All right, let's shift gears. I got to talk about this Australian wildfire situation, obviously historic in nature. Is it just the heat that's causing the combination of heat, winds, and just the normal fires that pop up every year? Well, what is going on there?
Well, it's a little mixture of everything. It's a couple things working in tandem to just create just a horrific set of events for Australians. And climate change is part of it. Last year was the warmest year on record for Australia. How about this? The continent. 3 degrees warmer than normal. Now,
wow. In 1 year?
In 1 year. That last year. Now, 3 degrees warmer than normal in your house. Okay, but when you're talking about an entire continent, they got their warmest temperature ever, all time. So the climate change part of it kind of set, put them in a real bad position where there was just a lot of dry, hot area, land, forests, and all that stuff. Just everything ready to kind of explode. They typically get thunderstorms there, and this is their monsoon season until March, so it's not going to be over for them, at least the typical kind of heightened period where they see thunderstorms until March. But, about 5% of their thunderstorms are, 5 to 10% are severe. So you're talking about an area that already is used to seeing powerful storms this time of the year, and they're coming off the hottest year on record.
Yeah, and when you talk about heat, boy, what 100, when you put it into Fahrenheit, because I've been reading so many of the Celsius readings. Yeah. Of course, and you can never make too much sense of that, but when you're talking about 115, 120 degrees in some spots?
Yeah, I think 121, I think, was their highest temperature they ever recorded. Yeah, come on. There's nothing... there's nothing we can do as humans to kind of make that area right. safe. I mean, we can keep you cool, but we can't do anything about the roads and all the trees and the ground is just going to be drying out so quickly that it's astonishing.
So what I wanted to ask you about, I've seen a couple headlines about this, and people that don't study, aren't meteorologists, sometimes writing the headlines can be a dangerous affair or tweeting about it. But I'm seeing they're saying out of this is the Bureau of Meteorology from Victoria. Mm-hmm. Fire-initiated thunderstorms yes. driving erratic, gusty conditions, damaging locally destructive winds at risk. How does that happen? How does fire create and change the weather patterns?
Well, first off, you need a big, powerful, strong, and hot fire. And you know what? This happens a lot on other planets, not so much on our planet. So what it creates, when it's so hot, you know, of course, the warm air is less dense, so it rises, right? It's going to take a bunch of stuff with it. It's going to take, you know, the heat from the fire. It's also going to take some particulate matter, a lot of ash and dust and things like that that are quite frankly extremely hot, right? So they're going to push up into the atmosphere. You know, some of these fires have pushed particulate matter and heat 10 miles above the surface of the Earth.
Wow.
So with that happening, you're basically creating a thunderstorm, or that's how it happens. You're displacing all that air, then you know it has to go somewhere, right? Even after it cools down, it's going to start coming down. That powerful updraft is what's going to create that downdraft, and it creates what's called a pyrocumulonimbus cloud. That doesn't sound good at all. Hey, we already don't like cumulonimbus clouds, right?
I know the second half. That doesn't sound good. Yeah. I know what pyro means.
Yes,
so
yeah.
No bueno.
You could tell that they just ran out of, they just said, all right, let's just call it a fire thunderstorm, right?
That's right. But let's make it sound scientific.
Yes. Pyro cumulonimbus clouds. You know, it happens time to time across the world, but it's happening, you know, obviously there. Those fires, I think it's 12 million acres or something
that
it's up to. They're creating their own thunderstorms, and of course with more thunder and lightning you have the potential for more fire.
Oh boy, that's incredible. And it doesn't show any signs of stopping, really.
No, well, like I said, their monsoon season goes on till March, so you know that's like the heightened period for their thunderstorms. So you know, if I were a meteorologist there, I'd say, all right, first we got to get through this monsoon season. But as far as weather wise, you know, there's no big relief coming there.
Yeah, and I know you got to get going, but not only immediately no relief, but boy, what do you do moving forward as you start to shape policy and where people live and what this happens? Now that we're seeing actual tangible results of climate change happening before our very eyes, I mean, we've been seeing it for years, but in this drastic measure, and where do you go from here?
Well, you know what? As someone who, you know, I did my best to make sure this climate change, you know, the whole hoax thing is, I'm sorry, I don't mean to get political.
No,
it shouldn't be a political
it's
issue.
Not
it should
political.
Be a joke. The whole hoax thing is a joke. And anyone who argues with climate change just doesn't like thermometers, right? I mean, if you sit a thermometer in the same place for 50 years and all of a sudden it's saying it's warmer, if you got an issue with that, then you should argue with the thermometer, not whatever scientists are out there. I think it's, unfortunately, there has to be widespread policy changes. I have no idea what it would be, but unfortunately it's going to be things like this that are probably going to make us make those tough decisions later. Hopefully they make us make those tough decisions, because you can call this an anomaly, but if it happens again in 10 years, 5 years, 15 years, mm-hmm. You know, we keep seeing these 100-year floods, or this is just, you know, this is the worst ever, I believe.
Right.
Eventually, I think the Earth is going to force us to change our minds and take those folks who really want to argue with thermometers and say, go sit down and you know.
Do what you want with it.
Yeah, do what you want.
Yeah, exactly.
Fight with the thermometer.
Yeah, exactly. Demetrius, thanks for joining us. We appreciate it.
Thank you. Always a pleasure.
Demetrius Ivory from WGN Channel 9. Yeah, gosh, it's a horror show what's happening there. It's hard to picture the circumstances which create what we're seeing, but a fire cloud, essentially, being caused over Australia. Hey, coming up in just a little bit, we are going to do the Mega Pros Monday Morning Quiz, sponsored by Mega Pros, making it fun to get stuff done. I was hoping we could tease one of the first questions here. And I know sometimes Mr. Steve Bertrand likes to join in, or Mary Vandeveld, if you want to answer the question too. That way, if our listener is listening now, they're going to get one freebie. Steve, you want to answer a question here? You want to play? We want to play our game?
Sure, I'll give it a shot.
Yeah, I think you'll get it. The category today, or Mary Vandeveld, if you want to chime on in, it's Chicago landmarks is going to be all of our 10 questions that we're going to get to. The first one I'm going to ask now, and you can go ahead and give them the answer if they're listening, him or her. This landmark is an industrial wasteland turned into a world-class public park. Between the 1850s and 1997, the land on which this park sits was controlled by the railroad. It's popular mirror selfie destination. It's a popular mirror selfie destination. I mean, that's an easy one to start with, right? Yeah? Steve, anyone?
Comiskey Bueller? Park?
Yeah.
Millennium Park?
Yeah, there we go. I had to get you to actually say the answer there. Yeah, it's Millennium Park. So we got 9 more questions that are based on Chicago landmarks. Kind of reading through them now. Ooh, some of them are a little bit tougher than that first one. But there, we gave away that first answer just for you. Again, it's the Mega Pros Monday Morning Quiz. Sponsored by Mega Pros, making it fun to get stuff done. We're going to do that in about an hour or so. Also got some Blackhawks tickets to give away as well, too. We'll talk during the break how we're going to do that coming up in a little bit. After the break, today is a very special day. It's not only back to work day for people, back to school day, but there's something that happens today more than any other day during the year, and it has to do with our personal lives. And if anyone can guess it, 312-981-7200, we'll see if you're right, and I'd love to chat about it. 720 WGN. John Hansen in for John Williams until noon, taking it right up to the Wintrust Business Lunch. I love when things get booked at the last minute. So coming up in the next hour, have you guys heard of these mental health apps? So, you know, traditionally, if you have an issue, you talk to a professional, you talk to a therapist, a psychologist, whatever the case may be, if you're dealing with the mental health issues. And I feel like the more and more we openly talk about it, the more and more people start doing that and, you know, are able to be open about it, the better. I think it's great. But colleges are starting to encourage their students to start using mental health apps. I got a lot of questions about how they work and if people are actually using them, if you really get the same sort of care that you might get face-to-face with someone. We're going to talk with an expert from Northwestern about it. But not only is there, you know, is there a discussion about, you know, whether you should use one or the benefits of it, but the privacy issues that go into using digital technology to reveal and have conversations about your mental health issues. It's a fascinating conversation that we're going to dive into in the next hour coming up. 312-981-7200. Okay, January 6th. It's Monday. I know a lot of people are getting back to work. You gotta get out a little early today. Had to drive into work for the first time in a couple weeks, perhaps. Lucky you, by the way, if you got those couple weeks off. But you're going back today. Maybe the kiddos, first time you had to wake them up after the long holiday. But there's something else that people are doing today a lot more than normal. And let's go to Rick. Rick, do you have the answer? What are they doing today?
I think that today is the day people look into divorce.
It is. It is divorce day. Rick, do you have any idea why that might be?
I think people are looking for a fresh start.
A fresh start for the new year.
New start.
You say that with confidence, Rick. Have you ever been a Monday after the holidays divorce guy yourself? Sorry if it's too personal of a question.
Me. No, 25 years, I'm happy.
Hey, there you go. So you're not even considering. Do you think it's the stress of the holidays a little bit too, or is this maybe, hey, we were trying to get through it for the kids?
It could be the latter.
Yeah, it could be, too. Hey, Rick, where are you calling from today?
I'm calling from Skokie.
Skokie. Hey, we appreciate the phone call. Yep, Rick got it right on the nose. Today is divorce day. The first Monday of the year, people dragging themselves back to work isn't just bad because of the realities of the New Year's resolutions. Reading from insider.com, by the way.
So divorce lawyers better make sure they don't take the day off.
Yeah, and that, and so the article goes on to talk about that, Mary, that this is not just hypothetical, oh, we're trying to come up with a national blank day because there's a day for everything, that lawyers really gear up for this time. And you might even have noticed an increase in advertisements for it on the TV stations. They say that right after January 1st, they pump a lot of money for divorce lawyers due to advertising dollars. I'll have to ask the sales crew if they see anything. I didn't notice anything different in our commercial breaks of specific divorce lawyers, but I have to see if some of the other stations noticed it. Family lawyers noticed people flooding in. They say dating Sunday was yesterday, as people, as Rick just mentioned, kind of the refresh. A lot of people start dating anew on January 5th as it
That's
falls
what
this
I
year.
Heard. I heard that this, today was a big day for signing up for dating, you know.
I guess you could do both in the same day, on, right?
Yeah.
If you want to jump dating right sex. Back in. 312-981-7200, as much as you're willing to share. I didn't realize there was such a calendar to this, but I guess it makes sense. I think a lot of people, once you get to October or so, any of those big lingering personal issues, you sort of just push back. At least I think a lot of people do. I don't know.
So you wait for the presents?
Yeah, you wait for the guests. Right. Yeah, that is true. You should, if it's within 2 weeks of the holiday, you should get an immediate back on that, right? Finders, you know, not finders keepers, but, you know, a retract. It should come with a 2 week return policy. Imagine spending $500 or something. So I just got Enrique a new iPhone. That was my big gift for our combo Christmas anniversary. If he files for divorce today, that's trouble. I want that back.
You want the phone back?
I want the phone. Actually, I want the phone myself. I was sitting there in the Apple store with him, just jealous and thinking, now I can't just buy a phone today, too, can I? Mine's a 3 or 4 years old.
Yeah. I think it'd be cool if a divorce lawyer called us and told us about today.
Hey, that's Elif's call, 312-981-7200. Any divorce lawyers out there noticing an increase in traffic here today? Any listeners, if you've been through the process, I'm sure it's not the most fun, but did you wait till after the holidays? Breakup coach, Sherilyn Chong, which is a job I would love to have. That is a gig, a breakup coach. It's the day where couples, she says, the day where couples were tolerating each other through the intense holiday season, but they want to start the year afresh, and that's when they get the surge in divorce inquiries. So not only are lawyers backing up this evidence, but it's also the internet backs this up. So they isolated Google searches on this day and in the previous couple days and the next couple days afterwards, and there is a huge surge in how do I get a divorce? What's the best way to get a divorce? Where do I go? How much money am I going to get? The word divorce itself seeing a gigantic spike today and the last couple days and the next couple days. I mean, something of along the lines of three times as many people searching that this week than, say, in 2 or 3 weeks. Might seem strange that so many people are doing it, dissolving their marriages at the same time, but as we've talked about and as our breakup coach talked about, she says sometimes they're doing it just so the children will have one last holiday season together. Other times, one spouse feels guilty about ending the relationship over the festivities. Yeah, once you get to grandma or grandpa's house, you're already in. You're not doing it there that night. Once you're at 11:15 when Steve Bertrand's going to bed on New Year's Eve, once you're there, you've got to make it till today, without a doubt. And I mean, you know, a lot of offices are closed on the day after New Year's, so it kind of makes sense. The first day you would do it. 773 says, I would like to start the process. Where do I start? Well, you can Google divorce lawyers. 773 says bankruptcy time, too. A lot of people filing for bankruptcy. I'll have to check on that. 847 says divorce afterwards because of taxes. Huh. So I don't know if they're saying to wait until the next tax year after you do your taxes, or maybe do it beforehand, because I think you have to file. If you were married at any point in 2019, you got to file collectively. 773 says, I actually do need a good lawyer. There are no assets between us. Okay, well, that sounds like a personal problem. 815 says online dating, that is what contributes to it. And the new year, when people start downloading the apps that they shouldn't, they start seeing what might be greener on the other side. Yeah, if you're already looking at a dating app, sounds like you're a little bit too late for the divorce. It's about time. 708 says, and this is an interesting twist, Richie chimes in, I guess today might be the day everyone decides to get healthy, lose some weight again. Like that excess weight in the relationship.
Oh.
Yeah.
I was really taking that literally.
Yeah, I was at first too, and then I realized, what did he say, a little extra weight, a little extra baggage, emotionally. So weigh on in, 312-981-7200. I don't know if that happened to you or if that's something that you've been a part of. The other argument that this breakup, which, by the way, breakup coach is a great job. I would just love to sit.
Why in the world would you want that job?
Yeah.
Because, I mean, there's only one. If you're hiring a breakup coach, You know what the end result is going to be, right? I mean, you're hiring someone. I assume what they're doing is coaching you through the process, or just delivering the news themselves. I don't want to.
What are they, serve papers? Like,
yes, exactly.
To the door. Are you serving you with the breakup?
Yeah, I don't know if they coach the one. I don't know.
Do they coach the breakupper or the breakupee?
Great question. I bet you can hire them on both.
I'm assuming the breakupper.
I assume so too.
A therapist can help with the breakupee.
Yes, that's what the mental health app. That's what that's for. Yeah, because you know, I think that sometimes you need that extra push. I think we've all been in relationships, maybe before our current ones, hopefully, that you just need that extra kick in the butt to do it. Like, maybe you've known for a long time, but for whatever reason you can't do it. Maybe you need to hire a breakup coach to get you on through. Anyways, this breakup coach says that the holidays, if you didn't know you wanted a divorce, the stress of it all, the holidays tend to shine a spotlight on what might already be broken. So maybe you were considering it, or you're on the fence, but you go ahead and you go through the holidays and you're like, man, that didn't give me that warm, cozy feeling that it's supposed to give me. I don't know. Let's go to Glenn. Glenn, you're on WGN.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. Happy New Year.
Yeah, you too.
I knew a couple who got a divorce for obvious financial reasons to keep the foreclosure on their house from going through, and they're still together, and they wanted to keep the house for their kids and the whole family, but they're living together there in that house.
So,
for financial reasons, they found a good loophole to keep the house.
So romantically, they were still all in.
Yeah.
And they just worked the system.
Yep.
So when they told people they were getting divorced, I imagine they had to say that, right? They were probably just to avoid people being too concerned. They're like, oh, but don't worry, it's only for this.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, it's just like neighbors knowing neighbors, and everybody's like, okay, well, that's what you got to do. Nobody condoned them or anything, but they were happy because they still, even the neighbors were happy for them, so they still had their property and everything and the kids and all that.
Glenn, I got to say, I bet they didn't know that was going to happen, and they got a breakup coach to figure that out for them. They looked at the silver lining there.
Yep, they did.
All right, Glenn, thanks for the phone call. We appreciate it.
You're welcome.
312-981-7200, divorce day, apparently. And again, this breakup expert says that flaws are pre-existing a lot of times. The holidays shine that spotlight, and one spouse decides that they don't want to spend one more holiday season in an unhappy marriage. So it's almost like you went through it and you said, that's it. That's the last one of these that I can go through while trying to fake it. Because I think that's the other thing about the holidays, when you're around family, there's that element of having to fake it for other people. And maybe that if you're already kind of one foot out, you know, emotionally faking that you're in love with someone to other people can probably become so draining that you say to yourself, that's it. I cannot do one more of these. 312-981-7200, join the conversation. Also kind of curious, did you see this article in this column in the Tribune? A good friend of the show, I could not remember how to pronounce Mary's last name for the love
Schmeek.
Of it. Schmeek. Mary Schmeek had a great column about a guiding word for 2020. An idea, a lot of people have resolutions about what gets them through the new year. Well, Mary said that she decided to have a guiding word. Every year she chooses a guiding word and encourages readers to do the same. Gratitude, maybe compassion. Readers write in to her about why they choose the way that they do it. And I think that's an interesting way to kind of sum up a resolution or a thought process or a mindset in one concise word. You might think it's a bunch of baloney, and maybe I think that's Steve Bertrand probably. I can't imagine him picking his guidance word.
Oh, no, I think that's a good idea.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm surprised. I thought you would kind of poo-poo the idea.
Well, why do you think that, John?
I don't know. There's some curmudgeonness. I'm the same way, Steve. Not in a bad way. You know, just
curmudgeonness in a good way.
Yeah.
I see, right.
Good curmudgeon. Right. 312-91.
So your word would be waffle.
Or flip-flop, I guess, if you have the hyphen in the middle of it. What are your 2020 words? We're going to share those a little bit. 312-981-7200. We'll do all that after the break here on 720 WGN. John Hanson in for John Williams until noon. We'll get the business lunch, Wintrust Business Lunch with G. Suki. It's 11:06 on this Monday afternoon. sort of a, or excuse me, still in the morning. Feels like afternoon to me. We're almost there. We're talking about 2020 and starting the new year, and obviously a lot of new folks going to, or people going to their jobs for the first time this year, going to class for the first time this year. And we're kind of beyond the thought of the resolutions. I think that's right around the first when everyone makes those and tries to keep them. I imagine it's only the sixth, but a lot of people have already broken theirs. But Mary Schmeich with a really interesting column in the Chicago Tribune this morning about trying to find a guiding word for 2020, a word to kind of carry you through to help you refocus. I'm going to get hers in a second because I think it's a really good one. But let's go to Miranda. Miranda, you're on WGN.
Hi, good morning.
Good morning. How are you doing today? Happy 2020.
Good. How are you? Happy 2020.
All right. So your word, as you try and come up with it, what did you come up with and why?
I came up with perseverance because throughout any difficulty, I feel like if you have a goal, it's important to keep working towards it.
So perseverance, just reminding yourself of that word, whether it's personal or a professional goal, you think that'll be the word to help you focus and keep on fighting?
Yeah, fighting for that master's degree.
Hey.
Yeah.
How far away are you? How much perseverance do you need to get it?
A year.
All right. 1 year's worth of perseverance. Miranda, thanks for the phone call. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
And good luck. Yeah, persevere right through that. 312-981-7200. What are your words here? Some ones that Mary considered but didn't use are listen. I think we could all use a little bit more listening to each other. Looking, like looking around, being more observant. Some people chose the word organize. Shed is one word. That's interesting. Shed. Oh, like shed the pounds maybe, or shed extra burden, something like that. Some of them have some deep meetings, some a little bit more honest or simple.
Mary has that word in her column. It says shed as in get rid of those power cords you haven't used in a dozen years.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, I'm going through some of the ones that she considered before she came up to hers. Get rid of the power cords. That's so true. The clutter in our lives and our closets and stuff is enough to drive a lot of people mad. I'm one of those people where I kind of let the clutter get to a certain point but never past it. And then once it gets to that point, I do a clean sweep. So it builds. Some people look at me like, is he a hoarder? Is he not a hoarder? Enrique is like, is he ever going to pick that thing up and move it? And right when it gets to the point where someone might say, you're a hoarder, it's all gone. So I avoid getting quite there. Throw it all away kind of en masse. Shed's a good one. Pause was another one that Mary considered. P-A-U-S-E. On the bottom of feet for dogs and cats. But pause. I think that's a good one, too. I think a lot of times, especially in this day and age of social media, we fire back responses really quickly when we argue with people online, or we can't wait to react. We can't wait to be offended. We can't wait to whatever. And if you just pause for a moment, it feels good.
Yeah. I got a text message from someone the other day that annoyed me, and I didn't acknowledge it in the text. Mm-hmm. So I went to a different person to ask them what their opinion was of it, and they helped me like realize that it wasn't what I thought it was. It wasn't something annoying. It was just like, it's just texting is, it's hard to communicate really fully through texting.
Was that for me or no? That text message that you delayed on? What'd I do this time, Aleph?
Yeah, it was definitely you, John. You always tick me off.
312-981-7200. What is your word for 2020? 847 says, my word is focus. I tend to go from one project to another, never quite accomplish anything, and focus on my diet to stop mindless eating. Yeah, for sure. By the way, we were talking about the divorces on, and by the way, I know I say that word really wrong. Until I was about 15, I thought it was a three-syllable word, divorce, and like Dolores, but said like that, and someone had to correct me that it's divorce.
You would say Dvoris?
Dvoris, yes, like Dolores.
Well, I used to say Shalalom until just a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I said 15, but I actually think it was way later than that. Someone's like, what are you saying?
Might have been the most recent Olympics for me. I'm like, it's Slalom?
Oh, wait, you said Shalalom for that?
Yeah.
I thought maybe you were doing that instead of salmon. I was shocked that you wouldn't know that.
Shalalom.
Instead of Slalom.
Slalom, yeah.
Hey, what are your weird words you say? 312-981-7200. I think everyone's got the one. But yeah, I used to say divorce. And I still kind of just split the difference. 219 says, I've been thinking calmness, which I like. Oh, by the way, what I was getting at from the 815, we were talking about divorce around the new year and how this is divorce day or whatever. But the 815 chimed in with something really sweet to put a bright light on a day like today. 19 years ago, says this texter, on the first Monday after the new year, my husband and I contacted an adoption agency and started the process to adopt our fifth child. We did international adoption, and our daughter turned 17 this past October. Wow, good for you guys, 17 years. So new year, you thought adding a fifth child would be great, and you went international with the adoption route. That's good, yeah. Sometimes you take stock of all the good things, too. 815 is chiming in with the word time. Time will be their focus for 2020, as in being on time more often. It's a good goal. 630 says kindness. Kindness transcends all barriers. Yeah, that's true. Kindness is a good one. I think there's a lot of moments where, boy, you can't find it. And if you have that as your guiding word, maybe sympathy or empathy is a good one, too. Reflection, something like that. Getting back to Mary's column, she thought about help and shed and pause we talked about. She thought about walk. I'm a big believer, as is Mary, that, you know, a good walk, if you can spare even 20 minutes, just the physical activity, just even if it's just minimal, just a stroll, small stroll, is so therapeutic. I love long walks, and I take them as much as possible. And she considered that one, and then lists look and organized. But she said it was staring at her in the form of a big blinking roadside. She said she was driving, she was actually on a walk, and it said, too fast, slow down. She glanced at the speedometer on the sign, and she was over the limit, but she was just driving fast because of a reflex. So she tapped the brake, and her 2020 word shimmered into view, slower. So she said that she thought about her dental hygienist, who tells her that in all patients would save our teeth if we just brushed a little bit slower.
I've heard that before.
Yeah, right? And just if you just slow down a little bit. Mary also thought about the chiding voice she hears when she's playing the piano, the one that reminds her that she'd likelier learn the right notes if she didn't play so fast. She thought about the same voice, gobbling lunch with a column deadline looming that says, slow down, eating fast won't help you write fast, sister. And yeah, eating slower, enjoying the mastication. They say that is one of the most easy ways to lose weight, is just to eat slower and enjoy each bite, and you savor it a little bit. Mary goes on to say that speed is thrilling, has its place, but much of the sped-up way we live is self-defeating. In our accelerating world, fast gets faster, faster gets even faster. Speed becomes a contagion that infects everything we do, from how we eat to how we consume the news and react to it. It's tempting to think that speed is vital to life as breath, but mostly it's not. All we have to do is breathe more slowly. And we have to know that slowing down is a way to see and hear and think more clearly. Slowing down, we make space to notice what's going on, and noticing helps us make better choices. Whoa, that was a good one. I like slower. That's one of those all-encompassing words for 2020 that can help as we do politics or whatever the case may be. My word year for this election year is drunk. That's from the 630. 815 chimes in with disclosure. Wants to find out what's really going on. 708 says positivity, and the 847 says fearless. All good words for your 2020. All right, so Blackhawks, we got some tickets we're going to be giving away here for their upcoming game. Thursday night, they're taking on the Nashville Predators at United Center, and we have got two pairs of tickets for that game. So what we want you to do, if you want to go to the Blackhawks game Thursday night, 312-981-7200. As we head into the commercial break, we're going to take the, let's call it the third and the seventh caller. 312-981-7200. If you're the third or the seventh caller, you are going to the Blackhawks game against the Predators Thursday night, courtesy of Four Seasons Heating, Air Conditioning, and Plumbing. For all the right reasons, Four Seasons. Find them online at Four Seasons Heating Cooling. 312-981-7200 to go to the Blackhawks game on Thursday night. Blackhawks, they got a game before the Thursday night game. They're hosting Calgary tomorrow night, but we got two winners that are going to be going to the game on Thursday. Let's go to Michelle and Batavia. Michelle, you're going to the Blackhawks game on Thursday. How about that?
That's awesome. Thank you so much.
You a big Blackhawks fan? You got any games this year?
You know, I haven't, but the ones that I have gone to in the past, they're just so exciting. I really love going there.
That's great. I'm your in-arena host. You can come say hi to me in Section 312, okay?
Awesome. Thank you so much.
Michelle from Batavia is going to the Blackhawks game. Hey, guess who else is going from Lake Bluff? Al, you're going to the Hawks game on Thursday.
All right. fantastic. I can't wait.
Who's your favorite Hawk to cheer on right now these days?
Well, I guess I like Kane. I like the young guys. I like the Brinkett, too.
Oh, okay.
Brinkett's, yeah, the camp's good.
And they're playing better, too, which is great news, too.
Yeah. Last night was a great game.
Yeah, for sure. All right, Al, hang on the line. We're going to get your information to make sure that you get to go to the Blackhawks game. And I think I hung up on Michelle. Hopefully, I think she's calling back right now. But if you are our first winner, please call back because I hung up. We want to make sure you get to the Blackhawks game. All right, let's shift gears here entirely from the Blackhawks to a topic that I find fascinating. Obviously, mental health issues are an important topic of conversation every day. And the more that we have the honest conversations, especially with their young adults, is important, and making them see professionals, not making them, but encouraging them to see mental health professionals to talk through these issues is important. And joining us to talk about that and other issues is Nia Cortez, behavioral health counselor at Northwestern Medicine Central DuPage Hospital. Nia, thanks for joining us here on WGN.
Hi, I'm glad to be on air. This is awesome.
Yeah, well, you focus on young adult mental health and you have a track program. Tell us a little bit about that.
Sure. So here at Central DuPage Hospital Behavioral Health, we have what's called the Young Adult Track. And we basically work with young adults that come in and help them kind of get back on track and answer that question of, you know, what do you want to do with your life?
Yeah, it's such a hard time. I can remember specifically being lost in the weeds a little bit. Even after you go to college and you come out of it, you're just a little bit lost. And I imagine just having someone to chat back and forth with, it doesn't solve every problem, but it certainly helps, you know, bring it to the forefront and at least helps you start thinking through it.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, we are people who need people. And so for these young adults to kind of take the courage and step into, hey, I need help and I'm lost. I don't know where to go with these things. So it's great that we have a great team here to really help guide them with you know, what's going on in their life.
So what you guys do there, is it one-to-one person, in-person sort of stuff?
So they get exposed to one-on-one sessions with a therapist, with a psychiatrist as well, and then they are exposed into like a group setting with our adult program, so they can get exposed to how the adults kind of work through their young adult life, so they know that they're not alone and thinking the way they do.
I love the idea of talking to people, and I think doing it in person, just it seems the most effective way to do it. But the reality is a lot of people, whether you live busy lives or you don't have the opportunities or you're in areas that are maybe a little bit more underserved in terms of mental health facilities, and there's a focus here amongst college students as well with apps that help with mental health. Have you heard of these? Do you have any thoughts on them?
Some of them being brought up, I kind of looked into some of them too. And I mean, there's a pros and cons to it. Right now, I think social media is kind of guiding a lot of that, like if you, that instant quick fix type piece. But also on the other hand, there are some benefits where it does kind of recenter you in a sense. If you're that person who you're like, I need to step back from people. I need my one-on-one time. So there's those pros and cons, but you know, I think that face-to-face time is essential for, you know, people struggling and trying to getting out of their head.
The Tau Connect is the one that this Washington Post article talks about. And it really, the Post article I'm referring to talks more about the privacy concerns with it, which I imagine, you know, I hadn't really thought about. But if you're entering information, having a conversation in this digital world where, you know, anything's possible to be taken from you, boy, you've got to take quite a leap to use one of those apps.
Yeah, no, I agree with that, especially with young adults. You know, social media is kind of like, oh, social media, new thing, and just whatever. I sign up, there's my info, and here we go. I mean, there's not really any futuristic thinking of what is this going to do in the long run for me? How is this going to affect me in the long run? I mean, because like I said, they're looking for that quick fix. You know, it's that survival mode of I need help. Who can I get that help from? And I need that help now.
I think part of the need for the apps, and this is what the article talks about, and hoping you could speak to. They interviewed a director at the University of Florida's Counseling and Wellness Center. They said that they've hired three new positions to take on the load of students that are looking for help. But even still, there's wait list free weeks, only a few of them out of the entire semester. The rest of the time, you're being put on a wait list. And I can imagine that that's where that need sort of arises. The idea being is if someone needs help, boy, you really don't want to put them on a wait list.
No, yeah, for sure. I mean, we come across that for, you know, we've been coming across that for a little while, you know, with just, you know, how do I get this instant time with somebody because I really need to reach out. And so that's where sometimes those apps can be beneficial when they give you tools and resources on how to calm the anxiety or what to do or who to reach out to and give them tips in that sort of sense. You know, so I can see that why that might be something they're reaching for.
The landscape,
for in those moments. Yeah,
the landscape has completely changed. I'm 35, so when I was, it didn't seem like that long ago. I was in college, but we're coming up on 20 years. You know, we didn't talk as openly about this. There were, of course, mental health problems that we probably all should have been talking about more. But go back even further. I imagine a lot of folks listening right now go back, you know, 40, 50, 60 years since they were that age. I bet there's some roll in their eyes a little bit. Like, are we being too sensitive? Talk to about the state of college-age students in America these days. I mean, the need really is great.
Yeah, I mean, you can definitely sense that there is a shift with, you know, how people tolerate pressure or just how not to make situations worse. I mean, sometimes we have kids young as 18 coming in and like, yeah, I was supposed to go into engineering, but I flaked out on it because of the pressure. And I think it's the mindset is different from how it was, you know, surviving back then versus surviving, you know, now with schools and, you know, pushing for, you know, those AP classes and you have to be in the top and you have to do this and that, and it's a lot, and then all of a sudden it's like, all right, here, now you're an adult, now you have to figure it out.
They say that 3 out of 5 U.S. college students experience overwhelming anxiety, 60%. 40% of students reported debilitating depression. 40% of students, and that's according to a 2018 survey from the American College Health Association. Any reaction to that, or as you're saying, yeah, that's what we see when we're talking to students?
Yeah, I mean, that's what we're seeing. And to put that into more of a visual perspective, these students who are having this high depression and anxiety are also the high achieving students where you don't see any physical, like, sad Eeyore type depression. These guys have this mask on where it's like, I need to face this and act like I have everything under control, even though inside they do not.
When you, I don't know how much you've actually gotten to experience or try to use these apps or read about, do you know how some, and you don't have to speak specifically to each one, but is it a matter of, is it like a FaceTime with a professional? Is it just kind of chatting via text back and forth? Is it just posting on a message board and hoping one replies? Do you know, have any idea exactly how they work?
No, I mean, I don't know anything about like more of the FaceTime, but I have heard that there is kind of like that international, or not international, where they text a therapist and a therapist texts back. So I know that has becoming a little bit more popular because of how this generation is very much that text to communicate type piece, but not too,
yeah,
you know, sure, yeah.
Yeah, no, I mean, they're sort of a new thing. And, you know, I guess that if anyone is, you know, focused on getting some help, any way, any avenue in which they at least start that conversation, even if at the very least they use the app to bridge the gap on a wait list, it could be a beneficial thing.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, if there's tools on there to help them kind of get out of their head a little bit, to relax or to be mindful, learning how what they can and can't control, just teaching them those points at least to get them to, you know, surviving those moments, I think those are helpful. But to have live assessments and stuff, I feel like that's something a professional needs to see face-to-face. Because, you know, like with the WebMD, all of a sudden we're going to die. So, you know, it'd be, especially with the kids and, you know, young adults, we don't want their thoughts to get ahead of them and get ruminating.
For parents and grandparents listening right now, what can we do to help?
I think partnering with your young adult and also first educating yourself on really what's going on. Depression, anxiety is going to look different for everybody. It's going to come across different. People have different flavors of it. And so I think really educating yourself as a parent, as a grandparent, of like what's really going on with my kid, and just learning to connect with them in that level first, listening to them, showing them that compassion and grace to be able to be vulnerable to you as a parent, to be like, hey, I'm struggling and I need your help.
You're out at Central DuPage Hospital. We were talking about waitlists and stuff. With your program and what you do, is there kind of a way people sign up for it? Is it open? Is there opportunities for people to get some help now?
So what they can do is they call and request for an intake. at 933-4000, and then we got them in. We got them assessed on, like, okay, what's going on and how can we kind of set you up with the best resources, whether it be our PHP program or groups or other free resources that we can help assist them with.
That's great. Nia Cortez, behavioral health counselor at Northwestern Medicine Central DuPage Hospital. Thanks for joining us here today.
Thanks for having me.
All right. What we're going to do after the news is we are going to play the Chicago Quiz. Mega Pros making it fun to get things done. So what we need is a contestant. 312-981-7200 for your chance to win a really cool hoodie, sweatshirt. 312-981-7200. You're going to get 10 questions about Chicago landmarks. Steve Bertrand already answered one of them. There's some harder ones on there, too. But we need a contestant. 312-981-7200 to play our game. We do it every Monday. So we do this each Monday. It is the Mega Pros Quiz, Chicago Quiz. Don't know why I was so hesitant with that word. I'm looking for it on the piece of paper. Yes, the Mega Pros Quiz. And every Monday morning we do it. It's sponsored by Mega Pros, making it fun to get stuff done. Are we ready to play? All right, and here we go.
Back to Chicago.
To Chicago.
Chicago.
Drove to Chicago.
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 Chicago. Shy City. Shy City.
I'm coming home again.
How long did that take to put together, Alf? That was good.
It was John who did it.
John did that.
It took him like a couple hours.
It's a lot of Chicago references and songs.
Yeah, I gave him a couple.
And this also sounds like the Blue Man Group a little
bit.
It is. All right. Speaking of Chicago. All right, we're going to go out to Dave in Long Grove. Dave, you ready to play our game?
Yeah, I'm ready.
Are you good with Chicago knowledge?
I'd say 50-50.
50-50. Well, technically, we need you to be 80-20 to win our prize for today. But again,
okay.
It's okay. You'll be able to get it. No problem there. All right. So, Dave, we're going to have 10 questions about Chicago. Have you been listening all morning long, by the way, Dave?
Yeah.
All right, good. So you'll probably be able to get the first one because Mr. Bertrand gave you the answer earlier. All right. So, 10 questions on Chicago landmarks. If you get 8 of them, you're going to win our prize. If you miss 2 of them up, that's fine. We're going to keep on playing. We'll get all 10. Maybe you can encourage Elif to still give you the prize as we go through. All right, Dave, you ready to go?
Yeah.
All right, cool. I was stalling on my own end for something else. But here we go. Question. Go ahead. What do you got, Elif?
He can also use a lifeline if he needs Steve or me.
Yeah, all right. Steve or Elif, you can call for a lifeline. How does that sound, Dave?
Okay, sounds great.
Who would you call for if you had to? We'll get to it when we get to it. I guess it depends on the question. All right, question number one. This landmark is an industrial wasteland turned world-class public park. Between the 1850s and 1997, the land on which this park sits was controlled by the Illinois Central Railroad. It's a popular mirror selfie destination. What are we talking about here?
Oh, boy.
Big park. Debuted around
Millennium Park.
Yeah, there we go. Millennium Park. Ding. I'll do my own sound effects here.
Ding.
All right. Dave will do his own. All right. Question number two. This one's tougher. Spanning across 12 acres on the city's west side, this green landmark is one of the largest of its kind in the nation. After a devastating cold front in 1994 that damaged its crop, groups of community members convened to redevelop this space. Any ideas? It's got a big greenhouse as well, a couple of them. Any sorts of ideas? You want a hint?
Can sure. I give the hint?
Steve's going to give the hint. I think we're going to have the same one.
It's named after a cat?
Yeah, that hates Mondays.
A cat.
That hates Mondays, speaking of the Monday quiz. You ever open up the paper, the comics, loves lasagna? Oh,
let me see.
Cat that loves lasagna. There's only one I can think of.
Orange yeah. cat that
I
loves...
know the cat.
No, tell us the...
But I just can't...
Just tell us the cat.
I haven't heard the name in a while.
Garfield. Yeah! And then it's Garfield Park Conservatory. Let's give him a ding. Dave, give yourself a ding.
Okay, ding.
All right. 2 for 2. All right, this one's a little... We should have given multiple choice on that one. That's bad. That's bad on my end. All right. Question 3. This famous and historic park had to close its doors to visitors of its opening night ever due to rain. Was it Wrigley Field, Guaranteed Rate Field, or Soldier Field? A rainout in its first night game.
Oh, I would say Guaranteed Rate.
Oh, give yourself a buzz, my friend. I know. It's Wrigley, August 8th, 1988. The first night game at Wrigley after so many decades resisting the lights going on.
I was there.
Were you really?
Absolutely.
Oh, that's right.
And then they played it finally the next night. They played it. Did you go the next night then, too?
Yeah, I covered the anti-lights crowd, so I was there. I was up in the booth with Harry Carey and others during the rain delay. It was a pretty cool time.
That is incredible.
And then the next night, you know, it was a scheduled game. Mm-hmm. And so they had all kinds of free, it was easy to get tickets for the second game.
Oh, really?
It was impossible for the rain out, but very easy for the actual first night game.
So a lot of people, you know, they ended up going to the actual first
right,
one.
Right, exactly.
It was a big storm, too, that rolled through, right?
Oh, yeah.
All the people in the lights crew said, this is God telling the
So I'm in the booth with Harry Carey and Chuck Swirsky and these others, and they say, there's a Bertrand here covering the neighborhood. I said, well, I got to tell you, there's a lot of people who are very happy to see this rain right now. And Harry Carey turned and looked at me with a look that could kill.
Really?
Like, what are you doing in my booth saying something like that?
Oh, great. That's great. Maybe you just had one too many buds. All right, so question number four. Dave, you got one wrong. That's okay. Ernest Hemingway shares the hometown of the artist who designed this famous house, open for tours on the South Shore of Chicago. Just think Architect Chicago. It's kind of got a three-name name. Any ideas, Dave?
Frank Lloyd Wright.
Hey, ding, ding, ding. Give yourself a ding.
Ding.
All right, 3 out of 4. All right. This one we know pretty well. This building, currently being renovated and transformed for a new purpose, is built from an exterior collection of stones from other famous landmarks like the Parthenon, St. Peter's Basilica, Notre Dame, the White House, and most recently the Berlin Wall. Are we talking about the Wrigley Building, B, Tribune Tower, or C, the Carbide and Carbon Building? It used to be...
I'm going to use a lifeline.
Okay. How about I give you a real easy clue so you don't waste your lifeline? We used to be there. Like, I can see it right now.
Our radio station.
You know, you said most recently
the Wrigley Building?
You said something else I heard. Yeah, there it was.
Most recently was a piece of steel from the Twin Towers.
Oh, really? That was one of the more recent ones they added. Wow.
After the Berlin Wall, yeah.
Yeah. All right, give yourself a ding, Dave. Be very liberal with these dings. There we go, 4 out of 5. All right, this building on a street that's nicknamed the Great Street, that Great Street, has a ceiling made of Tiffany mosaic pieces and dons 2 7-ton clocks, sometimes used as meeting places. So the big clocks along the sides of the building. And we'd accept 2 different names here. Any idea?
The old Marshall Field.
Yes, there it is. It's now Macy's on State Street. But he got that one. Give yourself a ding.
Ding.
Your dings are pretty good. 5 out of 6 there. All right. This is about a neighborhood. This Halsted Street stretch is where a plate of flaming cheese and Euros were introduced to the United States. So what do we call that neighborhood along Halsted, just south of Madison? And Euros are very popular there.
Greektown.
Hey, all right. Give yourself a good ding on that one.
Ding.
Yeah. That was a good one. All right, you got 6 out of 7. Here we go. Just got to get 2 out of these next 3, and you're walking away with our prize. All right. This piece of artwork was a gift from Frederick H. Prince in 1974. It resides in a bank building. A documentary named The Gift is about its installation. Boy, I don't even know this one, Elif. This is a tough one. Any idea? I have to use a lifeline on this one.
Say it again, John.
Yeah, I'll give you this one again. This piece of artwork was a gift from Frederick H. Prince in 1974. It resides in a bank building. A documentary named The Gift is about its installation.
I have another clue for Dave if he wants it. Do you want it?
I think he does.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. There's a piece by Vivaldi that is really famous. Everyone knows it, and it has this same name.
That didn't help me.
Okay.
When the Saints go rolling
in? I don't think that helped.
Yeah. Do you have any idea, Steve?
I do not.
Yeah,
no.
I have never heard of this. Elif, did you know this or did you look at this one up?
Looked it up.
All right. Give yourself an Dave. Yeah. It's the Chagall's Four Seasons.
Chagall's.
Good start.
Wow.
Chagall's Four
Chagall's.
Seasons. What the heck is Chagall's? All right. Okay. All right, you got to get these last two right, Dave, to get the prize, or convince Elif after we're done. All right, consider an architectural masterpiece. This landmark is located in the center of Chicago's financial district, designed by Burnham and Root, and flaunting a two-story skylit lobby, which was later redesigned by Frank Lloyd Wright. Any idea what this name of this building is? I'll give you a clue. It shares part of the name shares a piece on the chessboard. Do you want your life? Do you want your lifeline on this one?
Yeah, I'm going to use a lifeline.
Hey, Bertrand, what do you got on this one?
Yeah. I don't think I know this one. I was going to go Monadnock, but that's not right.
Let's go. You want? How about you? You didn't say Steve. You said Elif, right? That's what you wanted, right, Dave?
Right.
Elif. What's the lifeline? What do you got?
I think it's the Rookery.
The Rookery. That is right. All right.
Wow. How did Elif get? Oh yeah, she put the quiz together.
We are doing everything we can to get Dave this hoodie, and it all comes down to this question. Question number 10. This condo structure duo, so two buildings, in downtown Chicago has quite a unique look. At the time of its construction in 1962, these buildings were the tallest residential structures in the world. People think that they look like corn cobs. Are they the Presidential Towers, 1 Bennett Park, or C, Marina City?
Marina City.
Hey! Give yourself the biggest ding of all!
Ding.
That's right. Dave is our winner. Had to use a lifeline. A few clues along the way. He forgot Garfield's name momentarily, but he is still the winner of Mega Pro's Monday Morning Quiz. And Dave, you got to hang on the line here because you are winning a Mega Pro's hoodie, sweatshirt, and Mega Pro's making fun to get things done. Visit megapros.com. All right, we're going to take a quick commercial break, then more here on WGN. John, I'll be back tomorrow, right, Elif? Thumbs up? We think
yes,
so? Okay.
Yes.
Okay. John will be back tomorrow. Got to hear Bob this morning. That was wonderful to hear Bob Serrano's first day here on WGN and did a great job. And, of course, he's a professional. How can it be? I'd actually never met Bob. It was a thrill to say hello to Bob Serrat this morning on the Crosstalk, and we look forward to him here on the morning show. Okay, so I've got a couple different directions we go. By the way, we got a lot of texters that are being a little too judgy of Dave. Yes, he struggled to come up with Garfield after about 9 clues about who the cat was. But, you know, when you're in that pressure moment, that situation, we got to give Dave a break here.
Yeah. What would you do if you were in that moment?
I mean, I probably would have said Garfield, but you never know. Like people, and especially what happens in your brain when you're being quizzed on something like that and people are giving you clues and, you know, here's it is. Come on. The pressure mounts the more you can tell that people are like, how do you not know this? So be nice to Dave. We had a lot of people chiming in with Garfield, obviously, the answer. Oh, people were getting him on the Wrigley Field question there, too. 312-91-7200 if you'd like to join the conversation. I wanted to let people know. I also didn't know that this was a thing. I wanted to let people know about it because it's a really limited window in which people can take advantage of it. So we've had an okay winter so far. It's bound to get a little bit tougher, and those things obviously, when the weather goes from warm to cold, the snow, you all know it, the potholes are bad, but the sidewalks also can be really cruddy in the area. And I don't know what I was thinking, but I always just assumed that if your sidewalk was messed up in Chicago, that the city would take care of that, that it was their responsibility to fix the sidewalk. I don't know if I'm just naive, Steve, or what, but I didn't realize that. I don't know if it's the same way in the suburbs, but the sidewalk is, I always knew it was your responsibility to shovel it, but if it goes out of whack or gets a giant crack in it, you got to replace it.
That's news to me.
Yeah.
I thought that was city property.
Right, so I always assume so, too. Maybe if there's a certain point that it gets so, gets dangerous that they'll come and fix it. But anyways, residents have their chance here in Chicago. And I don't know what it's like in the suburbs. I imagine each municipality does things a little bit differently. 312-917-200 if you want to let us know. But tomorrow, and this is for 24 hours only. This is from Block Club Chicago, by the way. Great website. Kelly Bauer wrote the story about residents having a chance to get your sidewalks repaired for less money. Have one day to sign up for it. It's a very Chicago thing that you have 24 hours to sign up for the Shared Cost Sidewalk Program. It's the Shared Cost Sidewalk Program. It allows residents that apply to have the city share a lot of the costs of the sidewalk repairs. They do this every year. Apparently, it's extremely popular that most of it's filled up before the day's even over. The applications are already tapped out. So participants are encouraged to file your application. So if you live in the city or know someone that does, if you've tripped on their sidewalk, maybe they were hosting an event, you fell down, you don't want that to happen again, let them know about this program. So residents are picked at a first-come, first-served basis. So they're not filing through all your applications. If you sign up, you're going to get help with this. So I didn't realize how costly this was, too. They say that it can cost thousands of dollars to have the sidewalk in front of your house replaced, which I guess makes sense. It's labor-intensive. They got to get the other one out, drill through it, or do whatever they do. I'm making this motion, Ella, if you know what I'm talking about. The jackhammer, that motion. They break up the sidewalk.
That is the worst jackhammer imitation I've ever seen.
You don't know,
you're holding it over your head. You're gonna jackhammer your toes.
Well, I'm sitting high, Steve. I gotta fine here. Although this can't look good on the camera.
No, it doesn't look good at all.
I hope you're watching on the stream. I regret a lot of things. I also regret just how wobbly I was while imitating the jackhammer. My arms really were shaking in ways I didn't know they did.
Remember, that was our mother's weight loss program. The belt?
Right. And then it was the shake weight.
That's above your head, though, right? Yeah, that's another motion you don't want to get caught doing.
I don't know how they get away with that.
People are dumb.
I love that you said that.
What, the motion that you want to make? Or that how people do it? Yeah, I don't know.
I just thought it was funny that Steve commented that way. I didn't think he'd say anything.
Anytime I get the flabby underarm thing when I'm waving or something like that, if you haven't worked out in a little while, it's been a little while for me. I always think of Oprah. She would always talk about that on her show. I don't know if anyone remembers that. She would just continually, even, you know, because she yo-yoed over her weight over the years, as pretty famously, but she'd always, when she was waving goodbye or something, she'd reference her flabby underarms if they were waving in the wind. It made me so self-conscious, and now as I'm doing my jackhammer, I need to stop. Anyways, that's expensive, people, to jackhammer the sidewalk away and re-put the sidewalk there and level it on out, all that stuff. Thousands upon thousands of dollars. But if you sign up for this program for the city, you're only going to pay anywhere from like $600 to $1,500, which still sounds like a lot. By the way, in Evergreen Park, they're saying the same programs there. You have more than one day to sign up. Each square is $350 to
do. You know, now that you say that, that does sound familiar that you have to share the cost. That's crazy. Part of it.
Well, in the city, if you don't do this program quickly, you're going to have to do the whole thing. There's not going to be a shared opportunity. So apparently you're going to pay $600 to $1,500. And the way you do it, you go online. Let me click the link because it starts at 6 a.m. tomorrow. So I'm preparing everyone for it. But if it's first come, first serve, you're going to have to set an alarm to do this thing. So 6 a.m. tomorrow morning, you go to 311.chicago.gov. Or just chicago.gov brings you there. And this is where you can apply for this sidewalk repair. Or you can just call 311 and let them know who you are and that you want it. So residents who call to apply should specifically mention that they want that shared cost sidewalk program. And you should also note that if you're a senior citizen or if you have different abilities, maybe some physical limitations, they'll maybe move you up to the front of the line, I think. I don't know. It's first come, first serve. But maybe if there's a few things that you're doing, that's something to take.
How about if you contribute to your alderman?
Right. Well, before they get rid of aldermanic privilege here, Steve, you only got a little bit longer. Yeah, that would be the real Chicago way. Or just leave a couple bucks out by the sidewalk after they come and then something happens. Don't get quite the bill that you thought you were going to get. And what they're going to do is they're going to get your address, your name, your phone number, email address, and all that sort of stuff. And then the Department of Transportation is going to go around. They're going to survey all the sidewalks. So if you have like a perfect one, you're not going to get it redone. They're going to check to see if you really do need repairs. And then apparently you're going to get some mail if you made it in the program or not. So I know this is boring to think about, but I know there's a lot of people out there that are so sick of the way their sidewalk works. I'm just shocked. I mean, I know we're a cash-strapped place, but I always just assumed the sidewalks were like the sewers. The city's got to take care of that. Apparently, I was wrong. 312-981-7200. Also, on this line of infrastructure, this is what I call the infrastructure block, Steve and Elif. If you're walking around the Lakeview neighborhood at all today, you're going to notice these giant, they're redoing the overpass. They're doing this gigantic project where they're taking the red line, the bypass, and the brown line is going to go over the red line. It kind of looks like a Disney monorail if you've ever seen these plans. It's apparently to prevent about 28 seconds worth of delays, which seems like a lot of money to prevent one delay. If you ever have ridden southbound on the red line or the brown line, especially the red line, you'll notice that you have to wait for trains to pass to be able to go. to cross over. Anyways, I'm describing this terribly, but the point is that they're moving forward with
do it while making the jackhammer noise.
So they're going out there like that.
Okay, I get it now. I see it. Yeah.
So it's all part of this modernization of the Belmont Bypass. It's a $2.1 billion project. The whole project is with the red and purple line. But it's crazy. And I walked by one of these the other day. There's these they're digging 70 feet into the ground. And there's these gigantic holes that are dotting the area. Obviously, they're all fenced off. You don't want to be stumbling around. If you're going in Wrigleyville and you're stumbling, don't cross or don't jump any fences that you shouldn't. Because there's 70-foot holes in the ground all over the area where this is getting done. But they're in their third month of the project. Anyways, it's taking a little bit longer than they thought, and they're digging these holes. So I'm just saying, don't walk in any holes today. All right, let's go to Joanne. Joanne, you're on 720. Save me, Joanne. What do you got?
Hey, I live in the suburbs. Hello, by the way.
Hey, Joanne.
And we got letters a couple years ago, and they wanted us to participate in the same program to get our sidewalks. I had two trip hazards on in front of my front house, and I called them and I said it was my understanding that the sidewalks were the city's responsibility. So why are you asking me to pay for it? And she says, well, it is the city's responsibility, but if we can get the homeowners to help us, you know, it defrays the cost on their end.
Huh.
So it is. I never paid for it. And they did come out and fix it because I told them, I said, why? It's not my responsibility. It's the village's responsibility. So if the city of Chicago has the same thing, so it's like kind of like a program to, hey, if we can get people to pay for it, even though it's not their responsibility, let's do it. So I'm just throwing it out there.
Interesting. So I think I could see where you're saying that if a sidewalk was horrendously bad and it was a nuisance or potentially a danger to other people, that they maybe have like a triage where they go through certain sidewalks and they get them done and they do it. But I guess by paying or absorbing some of the cost, I guess you move to the front of the line then.
Yeah, but you know what? If it's the village's responsibility to maintain the sidewalk, I maintain my yard. I clean the sidewalk off of snow. When it heavy repairs like that, I mean, we actually had trip hazards because they have shifted. Kids would go down on their bikes and fall off because they'd hit these two blocks of cement. Why? That's not the homeowner's responsibility. That's the village's responsibility.
Amen.
And
I agree.
For them to maintain it. So what they're trying to do is they're just sending it out to, hey, you share it with us and you won't have to pay the full price. It's not your responsibility to begin with.
All right, Joe. Hey,
city's responsibility, like it was our village's responsibility. I never paid anything. I told them I have a trip hazard in front of my house. They came out, they marked them, they fixed them.
Well, the squeaky wiggle.
Don't talk to me.
Yeah, you know what happens if you're the squeaky wheel. Joanne, where do you live, by the way? What village?
I live in Woodridge.
Woodridge. Hey, I'm from Downers Grove. Yeah. How's it going?
Hey.
Good to talk to you, Joanne.
Neighbors.
Yeah, there you
First
go.
First time I called, ever called in, I listened to you all the time, and I thought, you know what? This happened to me. And my neighbor just got one last year.
All it took was sidewalk repairs to get Joanne to call in. Thanks so much, Joanne. We appreciate it. No, and, you know, she actually brought back a harrowing childhood memory of mine. I'll share it really quickly. The most embarrassing thing that ever happened to me, I was riding as a kid, and we were always rode our bikes around the neighborhood, and I hit one of those uneven sidewalks, and I didn't fall to the ground. My wheel came off my bicycle and rolled down the street, and I fell. And then I fell, obviously. I can't drive that thing like a unicycle. But, oh, my, to have your wheel come off as a kid.
I can remember the hole in the sidewalk down, like, two doors down from me, or one door down from me, too, is by a tree.
Uh-huh.
And the root had buckled it up. I mean, I'm talking about when I'm 6 and 7 years old riding my bike. That's one of my memories of my neighborhood.
Yeah. So that's why we should keep them all there. No, I'm just kidding. All right, we're going to take a quick break, then the news, and find out what's coming up on the Winter's Business Lunch on 720 WGN. That'll do it for me. John Williams back tomorrow. G Suki, and now, hey, what you got coming up, G?
You know what? We're going to be talking about couples and who takes care of the finances.
Ooh.
I should ask you, but you know, my favorite moment of today is Steve Bertrand teasing you about your jackhammer. So that is going to live on in my memory.
Show her.
I'll come over and show it to you.